when I masturbate, I felt the same way as what you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is evil. I know it's wrong.
Yeah, it was so evil, I wouldn't even do it. Yeah. I used to fuck the floor.
Yeah, I would do that.
You do that? Yeah, fucking the floor rolls,
like,
dude.
Or a couch or something like that.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll fuck the shit out of a couch, dude.
Not the, like, the
No. I'm trying to fuck my dick up. Yeah. I'm trying. Oh, dude, that was the best. That's why I didn't spank off. I found something way better.
I used to, like, rub it like this against my jeans.
Oh,
like,
I should have. I mean, yeah.
And then it would bleed. And I'm like, oh, this is a problem. Yeah.
I'm glad I never applied the OCD to jacking off.
She only waltz to count her steps. 18 strides and she stops to abide by the law that she herself has set. That 18 steps is one complete set, and before the next 9 right and 9 left. She looks up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our show. Okay, hold on. Before we even start, did you know, and I bet you didn't, I guarantee you didn't, what I'm about to tell you. Did you know there's a video on YouTube, youtube.com, entitled, Which AA Rechargeable Battery is Best After 1 Year? This is all still part of the title. Which AA Rechargeable Battery is Best After 1 Year? Let's find out! Exclamation point. Eneloop. Duracell, Amazon, EBL. That is a video on YouTube. There was no way you were going to find out about it. Nothing you would have done in your life would have made the algorithm suggest that video to you. The which AA rechargeable battery is best after 1 year? Let's find out. Eneloop, Duracell, Amazon, EBL. There's no way. The only way you're finding out is for me. That's how fucking niche that video would be. It was uploaded December 26, 2019. Not even a year ago, right? Yep, not even a year ago. 614,884 views. I've been doing my podcast on YouTube since March. Started in March. My biggest download so far, 77,000. And that's only because it was Duncan Trussell and us talking about drugs, and only because his show had just premiered on Netflix. So anyway, I'd like to take this moment to say, please go to youtube.com/AriShafir and do me a favor and subscribe. 614,000. Oh, Project Farm. They have 1.46 million subscribers. That's one of their ways, the subscribers. Guys, subscribe. Anyway, let's talk about today's episode. It's going to be a fucking great one. I am obsessed with mental health. I love it. 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 Anytime I find somebody and they're like, this is Mrs. So-and-so, Jacobson. Unfortunately, this is the anniversary. Her son committed suicide. And everyone's like, oh, I'm so sorry, Ms. Jacobson. And then I'm there going, I'm also so sorry. How did he do it? She's like, what? I'm like, I'm sorry for your loss, but I just would like to, I would like to know how he did it so I can avoid the same. And she'll be like, my son, his suicide wasn't an accident. He didn't slip on a noose and fall. So you're saying it was a noose? The most classic of all ways to commit suicide? The noose? She's like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it doesn't. I can't help it. I'd have to ask. I would have to ask, especially suicide. But any sort of mental health problems, I am like, what's going on? How do they do it? What's happening? Maybe it's because I had depression. But when I hear about people who have anxiety, I'm like, what is that like? What's going on in your brain? I mean, this is really the basis of this fucking podcast. So today I had on this guy named Eli Sayers, comedian from New York. Let me give you some backstory about Eli when I first started noticing who he was. It was Roast Battle. I don't know if you guys know what Roast Battle is. It's fucking fun. Started in Los Angeles in the Belly Room. Brian Moses fucking started it. Then Jeff Ross helped him take it and make it bigger by putting his name on there and bringing celebrities in. Oh, there's a whole story of the Roast Battle. They had another member that they had to drive out. It's fucking crazy. But it went on in New York for LA for a long time. LA only. And they had, it was all WWE. It was just, that's why I tried to tell all these fucking reporters. They were like, I don't get it. I'm like, it's wrestling. It's wrestling. They're having fun. They're cutting promos. And They went to Montreal. They had a tournament. Mike Lawrence won. He was fucking crushed. Mike Lawrence was one of the best roast battlers of all time. Roast battles, if you don't know, you know what a roast is, right? Where they all make fun of somebody. And you know how then that person goes up on the dais themselves and they hit everybody that made fun of them. This is almost just that. It's one-on-one. I make fun of you. You make fun of me. First, they do one joke to one joke. Then the next round is like a full minute. And then the last round, I think, is – I forget how it works. And they had all this fucking – they had all Negro Wave, they called it, when Comedy Central got a hold of it and changed the name, because the old name was not suitable for a network that would no longer be around in 7 years from when they made that. I called that, by the way. I called it 4 years ago. Before anything that happened to me, I'm like, this network ain't going to be around in 10 years. And I overshot it. I mean, I overshot. I don't take no glee in that. I wish there was a platform for comics. But I do take glee in the fact that I called it. People were like, what are you talking about? They're going to be around. I'm like, I don't think so, man. They're not really run that well. This is before anything that happened to me. Anyway, so then the roast battle went to New York. And they started taking it on. They loved it. And they couldn't do the all Negro Way. They didn't have the space for it. It was all spatially, but the belly room worked perfectly for that. Rest in peace, Comedy Store. And people started doing better. People started making names for themselves. That was a way to get into the stand, is to do well at the roast battle. Zach Amico, who's on this podcast last week, started crushing. He was hilarious. And he won and won and won. And eventually, he was named the New York Roast Battle Champion. Fair enough. He deserved it. He led the Naked Roast every year at Shafir Fest, Skank Fest. By the way, if you're looking for a great podcast, you got to go to 2 weeks ago, the Jake Hanrahan podcast. In terms of like needing subscribers, it couldn't get any fucking views because Zax was up fucking 2 days ago. And it's already got more views than that because he's this war reporter who gives fucking legit real-time fucking on-the-ground like reports from the war. It's a popular front. He used to write for Vice, and then he said Vice got too corporate and he fucking went on his own. Great stories, but the YouTube algorithm will never let an anti-war video get anywhere. So it's got almost no hits. So go fucking watch that. Or listen to it. I'm telling you, if you didn't think to... It was a great one. So... Zach Amico was the roast battle champion. At some point, Eli Sayers, the guy who's on this week, started fucking winning and winning and winning and winning. And it was head to head. It was happening. Lennox Lewis, Tyson, you can only avoid it for so long. You know, Rocky Drago, Rocky Apollo. You can only avoid it for so long. They're going to come at each other. Macho Man Randy Savage versus Hulk Hogan. Eventually, you're going to fight or you're going to fight. You know, you got to do it. So they had a fucking battle, and it was one of the best battles of all time. And at the end of it, Eli, who understood what the wrestling aspect of roast battle, cut a promo. A promo is when, you can look it up if you don't know wrestling, or watch the Colt Cabana episode of Skeptic Tank where he tells you what a promo is. A promo is just you letting the world know through fucking... pomp and circumstance, through fucking, you know, good words, where you deserve to be. Let them all know who you are. So Eli beat Zach Amico. No one had beaten Zach in a long fucking time. And then immediately he goes, I am calling out Los Angeles. You guys have been ducking the New York scene for too long. And he cut this fucking sweet ass promo. And he said, let's combine the two coasts. East Coast roast battle versus least coast roast battle. Although, to be honest, in terms of roast battling, the West Coast does hold its own. And podcasting, clearly. 77,000 views. That's my most, whatever. Show your scars, not your wounds. So he cut this great promo, and eventually they had this tournament. They flew a bunch of guys out from New York to LA. They had the thing. And Eli Sayers united both coasts' belts. He won. And he won again and again and again and again. He was the undefeated two-coast champion in roast battle. And from then, obviously, he was going to be on a Comedy Central roast. Comedy Central wouldn't have him, and they wouldn't even let him fucking write. I don't know why. That fucking place sucked. That was a fucking wrong. It doesn't even matter what happened there. That was a wrong. He should have been on there. He's hilarious, my point. That's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about mental health. He's got obsessive compulsive disorder in a fucking weird way. So we're going to talk about that. First, I want to tell you a little something here or there. Sponsor, one of the sponsors, DHM Detox. Brought to you by No Days Wasted. I got to use this for it. NoDaysWasted.com.co. It's NoDaysWasted.co/Skeptic30. For this week only, special Black Friday. It seems racist. Black Friday sale. Do you think they had Black Friday sales in slave times? I bet if they did, I bet it had nothing to do with slaves. I bet it was just, you know, sales. Ari, you're going to lose another sponsor. Anyway, 30% off. Here's what it is. It's a DHM detox. It's these pills. And you take it while you're drinking. And I did. I drank heavy the week before Halloween. I mean heavy. We did this thing, Joe DeRosa's idea. You start at one place. We started at Big J's. And everyone creates a drink. And then you move to the next spot. And then you move to the next spot. And everyone does a drink and a little party game. Jay, of course, Big Jay Oakerson, has no imagination. He did his like wah-wah fucking white trash. He's the only Jewish white trash guy I know. Vodka and Sunkist. So we drank hella vodka and Sunkist. Walked from there to Astor Place to go watch the Pink Louds play. A fucking amazing band, Pink Louds. If you don't know them, fucking check them out on Spotify. They're fucking great. Then back to my place for Jello Shooters. And then on to get a drink on the way. Then DeRosa's spot where we just hella drank. Anyway, the point is, when we were at my place, I had these free samples. Love a free sample. And so I just gave them out to everybody. And they're like, what is it? Is it drugs, Ari? I'm like, no, you're right to ask. If Ari Shaffir hands you a pill, you're never wrong to ask, what is this? In fact, if I hand you a cookie, you're never wrong to ask. If I hand you gum, I actually gave Adam Egget once. He's been sober for a while at the time. And I had this some English gum. It's like real fucking, it lights up your mouth. They're like this big. They're like the chiclet size, but they're so fucking strong. I forget what they're called. And I gave him one. And I was like, oh, I found some in my pocket, probably from Edinburgh or something. And I was like, want some gum? He's like, sure. He goes, oh, it's strong. I'm like, yeah, 30 milligrams. And he goes, wait, what? Because he's sober. And I was like, nah, I'm joking. But you're not wrong to ask Ari what the fuck. That reminds me, one time we were at the UFC, me in the stands. We weren't in it. Me, Joey Diaz, and Alex Jones were all sitting together. It must have been in Texas somewhere, Dallas or Austin. Joey gives Alex Jones straight edge. Motherfucking Alex Jones, he drinks, but you know what I mean by straight edge, gives him a cookie. And he goes, what's in this, Joey? And Joey Diaz goes, eat the fucking cookie. What do you think it is? What, do I just have a baked cookie? at a fucking stadium? You know what the fuck it is, dude. Eat up. We're going to fucking eat later. You'll have a good appetite. So, anyway, the point is, we all took these pills, and the next day, I felt fucking fine. And I drank hard and didn't do the water thing that you're supposed to do. You know, you're supposed to drink water after every drink. Good luck with that. I mean, you're supposed to. So anyway, here's all the talking points. Forget the Sundays. Take two capsules. Here's the important thing. You just take two capsules after your first couple drinks, and it goes to work. Tens of thousands of people are using DHM Detox as their drinking buddy. DHM Detox. Love a good fart. Uses science to help boost your body's natural response to alcohol and help break down those toxins. Oh, okay. It's a perfect stocking stuffer or gift for your friends, family, and even yourself. I'd say yourself. Yeah, you're not going to convince anyone else to take it if you just leave it there. No, if it's a friend of yours, you might. Enjoy the holidays, drinks this year, and get back to doing what you love doing next day without feeling awful. It's vitamins, I guess. Anyway, the point is, you take them and you feel fucking I rested fine, felt great the next day, and I shouldn't have. So go to, it's a CO, nodayswasted.co. Very special Black Friday sale, 30% off your order and free shipping in the U.S. Oh, 30% off your first order, off your order, just as your order, and free shipping in the U.S. Just head over to nodayswasted.co/skeptic30 and use promo code skeptic30 at checkout this week only for 30% off. No Days Wasted offers a risk-free purchase. If you don't love it, they'll refund you on your first box. This is a no-brainer. Okay. So anyway, Eli. We talked about this for a while. It's a fucking crazy conversation. He comes from a really religious background. He'll tell you about it. He told me what he wants me to promote, so you should all check him out for this. Anyone who comes and does this podcast, I like how my fans and the listeners, you always end up going, letting people know, like, hey, great job on this. It makes it feel good. Do that for Eli, because I know he was fucking nervous about sharing this. I didn't realize until we're on that he had never really talked about this publicly before. A little bit to his friends, but never on a podcast. So I'm sure he's a bit worried about it. So let him know. But for plugs, he does the Roast Ghost podcast on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Google Pods, whatever. And he also has a college football segment on the Walk on the Ropes, on the Props Network, iTunes and YouTube. Come on, Eli, plug your own thing. Roast Ghost podcast on YouTube. You should check that out. Also, for other stuff, I think I mentioned my eyes would dry out and hurt, but I think I forgot to mention that one of my rituals was I often couldn't blink while I was doing all this stuff, so that explains it a bit better. You guys got to listen to it. I will tell you this. I wrote down some notes to fucking what to cover in the intro. How long am I? I'm already at 16. I do long intros. I still haven't found out who won the election. I'm out of the country. I decided to shut my phone off for that week and just tell everybody before I record Six and Jump with me, Big J, and Dan Soder. We do this podcast, watch 21 Jump Street, and then we talk about it for like 2 hours each episode. It's on Patreon. If you're looking for a fun Patreon, that's a good one. It's 2 hours every week. Full video. You can listen to it on what's it called, too? On like iTunes and stuff, but like that's a Patreon you should go to. Patreon.com/sixandjump. It's fun as fuck. Anyway, before we record it, I'm like, don't tell me you won. Still haven't found out. I love it. I love not knowing. It's dumb. At some point, and I've stopped people too, where they're like, do you know? I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to know. It's such a great way to stop a dumb conversation. Who gives a fuck about politics? It's boring. You have your feelings, they have their feelings. Completely, none of you have done any research enough to actually know who should win. The point is, though, it's fucking boring conversation. Nobody ever listens. So why do it? So here's my thing. Just say like, hey, I'm not talking about politics. Try it with my mom. Works perfectly. Like, well, and they keep trying. Like, hey, no, I don't want to talk about politics. I think it's uncouth. And it just stops people. Well, what should we talk about? Anything else? How's your granddaughter? Wouldn't you rather talk about your granddaughter than about some guy you hate? But no, they wouldn't. So yeah, I don't know who won. I will say it was probably close. My guess is probably right around the same like difference in like total votes as last year. Right? Within a couple of percentage points. There'll probably be limited violence. I think if Trump wins, there'll be a fuckload of violence from like the left. And if Trump loses, there'll probably be like, if Trump loses, his fans, they're not as violent. They don't like just riot, you know, randomly. But when they get violent, like when they do get violent, it's epic violence. It's like machine gun violence. It ain't fucking beating somebody up, you know, with a fucking fire hydrant or anything like that. It's fucking machine guns, bro. They try to take a governor hostage. Their violence, it's less, but they're violence for the record books. But anyway, I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me in the comments. Dude, I was what's it called? Where do I get here? Benefits of Oath. Oh, I should tell you. I should tell you that for self-help, I should say this. Maybe I'll say it right at the end, or maybe I'll just say it now. You guys, if you're going through shit, go see a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I don't know the difference. I'm just a comedian. I do podcasts so people come see me on stage, and now I have no stage. So what am I even doing here? Guys, there's no shame in it. And I told Eli I should see somebody. There's no shame in it. There's no shame in it at all. If you're going through depression, anxiety, whatever, it's let it burn. And everyone is now with fucking COVID and shit. It's not like anyone isn't having these terrible thoughts. Go fucking see somebody and get somebody good too. You can fire them. What are you worried about? They're going to tell you, oh, I'll get on this pill. Oh, it's going to make me lethargic. Then just get off it. They don't control. They don't own you. You can do whatever the fuck you want. I found one. I found a bad one. I found one that when I was in my deepest depression thinking about suicide, and she gave me Wellbutrin. Didn't work. And she goes, well, I don't know what to tell you. I was like, all right, no fault. I don't mean to make you mad, lady. She was a shitty one. She was a shitty one. I had a friend, went to one of those psychologists, therapists, psychiatrists, whatever they're called. They said, you should quit smoking weed. Pot is bad for you. And she was like, oh, that's actually not why I'm here at all. I have like real like negative thoughts and my brain is, that's all it is. It's a brain sprain or a brain break or a malformed brain. It's never going to be normal. Mine was a brain sprain. Some of people's like, you were born with like a fucking fish arm for a brain. It ain't going to grow back, but you can learn how to fucking, you know, flop that fish arm around and use it for good. I saw next week. Oh, I saw a weird thing out here. Anyway, she was like, I'll just find another guy. And then you go to another therapist and they're like, no, you can smoke weed. That's what I'm already here for. She's like, yeah, find one that works for you. Dude, so I was out today and these two guys came up to me. It is tough to say no to people. These dudes asking me for cash in the park. When you say no to like a beggar, but these guys weren't beggars. They were more like younger, you know, they weren't like homeless crazy. I thought they maybe were Brazilian, and I just saw City of God last night. So these dudes came up to me today and they were like black zillions. So same type of fucking of what I just saw, these kids with fucking guns who have no fear of violence. And they're like, I know what they're asking me for, money, but I'm like, lo siento. Like, it's just tough to say no to somebody when you don't know the language. It's tough to lie to them about how you don't have any money in your pocket. Because I'm also thinking, he's like, well, show me your pockets. Dude, he wrote down in here, he wrote down 50 cent. That's right. He's like, can I borrow your notebook? And he wrote down 50 cent because that's what he wanted, 50 cents. And I was like, don't have it. You have to think of, my husband has all the money and he's in the mall. The next one's going to be wet for sure. Been farting as long as there's a lot of farts out here. Yeah. And then I started getting scared. They sat down next to me on a bench in the park and they were asking, I'm like, fuck, I'm fucked. I want my notebook back. They could just, because I know at some point they're like, you're going to give me your money. I'd be like, fuck, where do I run? I'm with Bandit. He's not a fucking fighter. He'll just fucking lick their hands as they're beating the shit out of me. I'm having fun though, you guys. I like being out in the world. I really having fun. Let's start, right? Get a good pot, get a good mental health provider. Oh, when I do say that, I need to say this as a fucking addendum or disclaimer. Oh, I have another sponsor real quick. I have another sponsor. It's Manscaped. Once again, it's Manscaped. For when you shave your balls and shit. Or your nose hairs or ears hairs. I have them. You won't be able to see them. I have nose hairs here or there. Do you ever get a nose hair and then pluck it out? And as soon as you pluck it out, you just start tearing. I do that in my ear hair too. I like pull it out. I like, but you got to get the right angle. You got to get it between it's two fingernails. It's really two fingernails, the thumb and the end, but you got to get it in those fingernails and you got to pull it out. Not just randomly. It's like a weed. You got to get it at the root. Anyway, a far better way to do that is manscaped.com. Gifting before male host. Oh, male. I'm a male host. Get 20% off shipping if you use the code SKEPTIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use promo code SKEPTIC. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds and make Santa proud. Okay, they've got a fucking... got a holiday fucking thing. Remind me about the disclaimer. Do not read. Yeah. So I'd say Joe DeRosa uses it like a lot. And that's the way he fucking gets his balls fucking. If it's when you want to trim your balls. That's what Manscaped is. Or your nose hairs, your ear hairs. They've got attachments. And Joe used the fucking smooth dick to fuck hella open mic comics over the years. No one's done better in the fucking comedy world among comedians than Joe DeRosa. Always consensual, pretty much always at his level too, but man, he fucks a lot of comics. All right, you're in luck. Manscaped Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle and makes for the perfect gift. Imagine opening an attractive box that says your balls will thank you with the most sought-after gadgets and scents a person can find. This new package includes the Weed Whacker ear, nose, and hair trimmer. That's what I was talking about, which is waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. They don't say that, but that's what I'm assuming. I doubt you want to use it in a pool. And use a 9,000 RPM motor powered, whatever, 360-degree rotary dual blade system. I love when any company talks above your head, like, use this. You're like, oh, it's almost like the same as like part of a complete breakfast, and you're like, oh, and then you like look into it, and you're like, oh no. That just means there's a cereal place here that offers cereal. It's a bunch of different cereals, sugar cereals, whatever. You get cereal and they do the part of a complete breakfast. And they offer you a bowl of cereal, a small bowl with some other shit. Just like Unas. Eggs Benedict or some shit like that. And you're like, this, and with milk and with juice. And you're like, this is what they mean by a complete. Anyway, if you're really into the RPMs for your fucking nose hairs, then this has 9,000. But the point is, it'll fucking cut your nose hairs out. 79% of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff. So why not use the best tools for the job? The Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, the best trimmer on the market for your balls, butt, and body. Manscaped.com. Use promo code SKEPTIC at checkout. It's 20% off. With free shipping, it'll make your balls smooth as a baby's. It'll make you want to eat off it, like you do when I see a baby and they have the smoothest, you know, like a ball hair. I'm not turned on by it sexually, but I'm like, man, that is something you could do coke off or you could eat off. Smooth as a baby's butt. That's what they say when they show you your table. Here's your table, smooth as a baby's butt, and you're like, mm-hmm. And you know you're not going to lose anything to that table. If you drop a piece of onion on it. Just pick that piece of onion and put it right in your mouth. That's what you want your balls to look like. Smooth as a baby's butt. So you can eat off it. I might have just lost another sponsor. The point is, go to manscaped.com. Use promo code SKEPTIC for 20% off your first order. Here's my disclaimer. Every fucking comic does this, and I fucking hate it. When they get big, I guess they turn into fucking self-help gurus. I got to stop this fucking intro. 28 minutes. Nah, I've done longer ones. They turn into self-help gurus. They start going like, this is what you have to do to fix your life. This is what you got to do. And you know why? I figured out why. Because people listen to this podcast, all sorts of podcasts. This one is Skeptic Tank with Ari Shaffir. It's actually called Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank. Just realized a flaw with this design. Actually, I love it. If you've seen this, if you're watching it on YouTube, youtube.com/Ari Shaffir, please subscribe. Check that part out. I forgot the guy's name who did it, but look, that's my fucking face. What a good fucking design. Oh, so every once in a while you get somebody who writes to you and says, hey, you know, when I was in the hospital with cancer, listening to your podcast, it really got me through it. I've had that. I know Duncan's had that. I know Rogan must have had that. Bert must have had that. Everybody, a lot of comics had that. And so then you start thinking like, well, I helped someone through cancer. Or when I'm all alone, you really help me get through it. Or a bad breakup, you help me get through it. Anything like that. And so then the comic starts thinking, hey, I can have an effect on these people's lives. And that's when you lose it, fucking comics. You're not self-help guys. You got them through it by just doing fucking funny shit. Just being who you were. And then they start acting like, here's how you help yourself. Every one of those comics is fucked up themselves. Don't listen to a word they said. Myself included. I will still tell you, go see a fucking therapist, but I'm not going to tell you how to fucking get through your shit. Are you out of your mind? And I want to say names so badly here, but I don't do that. Except when I do it, and then I feel bad about doing it. Shut up. The construction here starts at 6 fucking a.m. Yeah, these fucking, they're turning to these fucking, who's, oh, when am I, sometimes it's best to put down the weight and then walk freely. Shut the fuck up, all of you. You've heard them, right? You listen to other podcasts, don't you? You hear them acting like they fucking figured out the world. All they're doing is admitting that they have fucking serious mental problems. Don't listen to them. Listen to them for funny. Or for interesting conversation, but do not listen to them about how to fucking repair their lives when they clearly haven't done it. Here's the secret. Run a successful podcast and make millions of dollars off ads. I saw Bo Burnham once on a fucking Conan. I think it was Bo Burnham. I fucking love that guy, man. I fucking love that guy. And he was like, any advice for people to go out? He's like, you got to look it up on YouTube. And he's like, yeah, you won't. He was like, I hit the lottery. What are you talking about? It was so fucking honest. You're not going to become successful. He's like, you think you're going to become as big as me? I shouldn't have been as big as me. Myself included, too. It's like, I don't know. We got lucky. I know a lot of better comics who didn't get anywhere. Anyway, let's start the episode, you guys. It's all about mental health. Should put in the fucking intro. 31. Wow. That's a long one. I'll admit that's a long one. Ladies and gentlemen, let's start, shall we? It's a fucking good one. Please tell your friends about this. Do me a favor. If you enjoy these podcasts, please tell your friends that you liked it. Help me get the numbers up. I'm telling you right now, if I get my Patreon numbers up, three times what they are right now, and they're not that high, so it's an easy goal to accomplish. I don't have to do ads anymore. Patreon.com/Ari Shaffir. But the 6th and Jump one is the one you should check out if you want real funny entertainment. The mine is just support me to help me fucking not do these ads. And I still do bonus content. But the 6th and Jump one, you ain't going to get more fucking great content than you're getting there. 2 fucking hours with video. Sometimes more. 2 hours. What was I going to say? Let's start the episode. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 407. Obsessive. With Eli Sayers starts now.
Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you.
First of all, great socks. I wish we could see that in the fucking full shove, but I don't think. No,
no, there's one.
I'm not talking about that one. There you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There you go. How does your OCD not allow you to not wear those?
Well, look, that's what you're talking about is hack OCD.
Okay.
Like the organizing the socks and show. Not there are people who seriously have it who probably do have some. That was never my shit, though.
Yeah.
Cleanliness was never my shit. A little germophobia, but cleanliness was not my, like.
It's one of the questions I want to get to is, I guess hack OCD is a good term for it, but like, what is the movie version of OCD? Versus like the reality. Like you ever see Fast Times? You've seen Fast Times.
I've not seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Wow. I've liked it. It's on the list. I love those. Better Off Dead is one of my favorite movies. I love that type of movie about nursing.
Yeah. What is that type of movie? Adventure film?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Yeah, it's like a teen
teen romps.
Teen comedy. Almost shit. Teen sex comedy ish.
Oh yeah. That was one of the early ones I jerked off to.
Yeah? You spanked off to that one?
She's fucking in a dugout after hours with this guy who ran, what was his name? Who ran the local like electronics store on Circuit City. He worked behind the counter, and he was like, fuck this like 16-year-old chick.
Oh, well, I see where you're coming from then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was
you were 16,
younger,
right? Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, it's a full woman to me. I'm 15, so
yeah, exactly.
That's a grown-up. But later, the guy, Ron Johnson, I think his character's name was my acting teacher in Los Angeles.
Oh, shit, dude. Yeah. That fucking rules, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Small rule. I never, yeah, those movies are great for spanking off, too.
Yeah.
I spanked off to Eliminate. Oops. We didn't have cable.
To Eliminate?
Eliminate, yeah, yeah. That's when you don't have cable, you stay up late and you watch Eliminate. Once they get on the dance floor, it gets pretty hot, let me tell you. Movie OCD, I feel like maybe it's gotten.
Well, I was going to say is Spicoli. I'm sure you
Is he OCD?
No. He is the version of pothead. And then, like, I never got high like that when I started getting high.
Right.
Except when I was on hash. And then I realized, like, well, that was just one type of high. But that became, like, the, yo, dude.
Yeah.
They're like, you know a lot of stoners. You don't see that much.
No, you don't.
So, like, there was a hacky version of stoner.
So that, oh, so what, question. What's I get what you mean. Of, I think the hacky version,
the
of,
movie version of that.
The movie version of OCD would probably be like, yeah, just cleanliness. Have to organize all their socks. Have to make sure everything's spick and span. Because most people just think of Howard Hughes, I think. Which is legit. And he had the cleanliness thing. So
his
people think.
Fingernails and shit.
Yeah, yeah. People think that's it. Like
this too, right? Light switch.
Oh yeah, yeah. I light switched. I did the hand washing. The like cleanly. I washed my hands, but it was more like I was like 10 is when it started, and I had a real religious upbringing in Alabama.
What Christian?
Yeah, my dad was a Mennonite pastor.
Mennonite.
Yes.
Is that the one that wears the coasters on their head?
isn't that Jews?
Yeah, yeah. No,
isn't that y'all?
Doilies.
I'm that's y'all, right?
Yeah, yeah. Doilies, long doilies is what I mean. Not coasters. You're right. We are. That is
the
us.
Women.
That is
well, here's the thing. The I grew up in a neighborhood that was more like the church was more inner city. It was like a lower middle class black neighborhood, black and redneck in Alabama. And okay. But my dad would headline church every Sunday. I call it headlining church, and he would lock himself in his room every Saturday and write his set, I guess, as you'd describe it, and like practice it, and then he'd go up and I'd watch him, do his set at church. But he would tour around in the sticks, and that's where I saw the actual Mennonite culture. That's where people were like, we would eat lunch after he would preach, and we'd go to like a farm. It would be like a house with like cornfields or like woods and like tractors and shit, and they had electricity, but like the TV was like, it was a small TV that was unplugged in like a stack of Bible videos, and we drink some sweet tea and all that. And the women wore coverings. My mom would wear a covering when at church, but the hardcore men, I'd say, wear coverings like 24/7. And if you looked at the women, you would think like Amish would come to mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
well,
very like,
Amish gets mixed up. So
yeah, they
much.
Get mixed. Yeah. They get mixed up some. But that I didn't like. I can't say I completely grew up in the Mennonite culture though. Like I said, I was in like kind of like a, I call it just like kind of a somewhat poor, pretty poor, like black and redneck neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And but the religion shit, I'll get this out of the way. My parents were great. I saw a lot of hypocrisy in the church and never with them. They were always 100% awesome. But I developed a huge fear of the devil and of demons and being possessed by a demon. That just terrified me, the idea of it, because that was reality.
Is that part of the culture?
Yeah, that was the reality I lived in. Like, I was told that was real. I was told by, like, the associate pastor. The associate pastor at the church was, like, this dude who would, like, wear, like, rebel flag bandanas and shit. And he would tell me about how he was, like, in a room with a 7-year-old girl who was possessed and, like, flinging grown men against the wall and stuff like that.
How does he get away with saying that?
I don't know, man.
You ever see this Kung Fu?
I still believe him. Like, I don't know.
Oh, well, that, you're right.
Not really. No, you know, it's just like,
that's how you get away with it.
But yeah. when you're like 10 years old and you have no reason, you trust the adults around you, you know? You're just kind of like, okay, I guess that's for real. And it freaked me out. So I developed my OCD thing.
But like, he was lying.
If you say so.
Not like I let me pray to God. That's like you're wrong. But if for an atheist, you're wrong. But you're not lying.
Yeah, you know, I get what difference? You mean. Yeah, you believe what you're saying. Whereas but that just that does just sound like crazy, right? Yeah,
like that never happened. So like
what sounds are you talking like about? It. I don't know, but it had an effect on me. I'll tell you that. Okay. So I was afraid that the demons would possess me if I didn't wash my hands right. So like I don't know whatever they
why
are.
Why how'd you get from one to the next?
Because something happened when I was 10 where. What happens is a bad thing happens. Whatever the shit in your brain is, when there's a bad thought or a bad thing, say I wash my hands and I accidentally think of the devil.
Okay.
You are gripped in a panic. My mind felt like it was being squeezed in a vice. And my body tensed up and clenched up. I guess panic attack, just like kind of a sustained panic attack, where if I didn't somehow clear this, if I didn't somehow make this right, I was 100% about to be possessed by a demon. And I was going to like kill people or myself or hurt people. And so I had to do a pattern of like, so say I thought about the devil while I was washing my hands. I have to cancel that out. So I have to wash my hands twice thinking about Jesus. That's how it starts.
And make your mind focus and on then Christ.
It once you do that, that's two. That's 2-1. Jesus won. So it clears it in your head. Okay. And suddenly all of it would dissipate. All the my brain would relax again and I would be free again.
You're good.
Yeah. Yes. But that's how it starts. But what happens is it eats you. It eats you from the inside. So I would wash my hands, think about the devil, and then do my two things with thinking about Jesus. But then I might accidentally swallow. And when I swallow, I accidentally thought about the devil. And that meant that the devil was inside me now and was going to, because I swallowed and I thought about the devil. So clearly the devil was attached to that swallow.
And you can't swallow two Jesuses and let him fight
it
out.
Oh, you gotta swallow them two Jesuses or you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You're in big trouble, mister. But like, so I would do that. But then you're also doing the hand washing at the same time. And you can't change anything. And the water gets hotter and hotter. So I would swallow and then sometimes you fuck up and you accidentally think about the devil because the brain is trying to fuck you up. It makes you think about the devil again. And then I have to cancel it out by going to, okay, four times thinking about Jesus washing my hands. And then I'd fuck that one up and I'd have to go to eight times. And the water's getting hotter and hotter and I can't change it. And then I'd fuck that up. I'd have to go 16 times. But the number 6 is in 16. That's the devil's number. So I'd have to double that to 32. But 3 is divisible by 6. So 3 is a devil's number too. I can't stop there. So I went to 64. But 6 is in that.
Oh.
So I went to 128. And then I could hopefully stop.
128 swallows?
Swallows and hand washes. No, 128 times to do it.
I know it's a fucking sickness, but wouldn't you go, so you need a constant. The water's on, right?
The water's constant. On. Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't the constant be the temperature of the water? So if it starts to get hotter, like, no, I got to add some cold to like even that out.
You're so wise. Where were you then? Where were you then? Right. I wish you would have talked to me then. So I would do it and my hands, sometimes when it was cold, I'd just keep doing it until it got so dry I would bleed from my hands when I was a kid.
From the hot water?
Or from, if this is what, because sometimes it would, I think sometimes it would be cold. So, and that would be the thing that happens when it's cold is it's better, but my hands would bleed because of the dryness. It would dry out my hands and like they would look at, yeah. And then, but with the hot, it would, my hands would just turn, purple, reddish purple. And I would see boils and blisters. And that was just the hand washing part. But the light switches, it was a similar deal. Light switch was with the swallow as well.
Wait, first, sorry. Let's stop there.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's a lot.
With the hand washing stuff. I mean, if you bled, you had a boil. Did parents and teachers not see that?
I got
that?
So good at hiding it. I was in, you know, this is like the 90s in the South, and I had no idea what OCD was. I thought I was good old-fashioned loony, and I thought that if I let my... And my parents knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
And they're greatest parents I could ask for. They tried so hard. I kept it. I was convinced that all this shit in my head, I mean, it sounds great. Like, I was like, oh, well, I will be put in a straitjacket if anyone finds out about this.
I mean, that's not completely wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one step away from that. Yeah, I could see that being like, he's going to hurt himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was like, I don't want to get thrown in a loony bin. I didn't know what I'd never heard of OCD at that point.
Yeah, that must make it way harder when you've never heard of it. I in college, took this class on some diversity class, and it was about gays in World War One or Two who came from small towns and didn't know what the fuck they had. Because there was nothing to compare it to. So they're just like, I got this weird, evil desire for men.
Can't
talk about this to anybody.
And
no
they had to
find
be
out. They didn't grow up in Manhattan. Then they show up. They're like drafted. And they showed up and like, hi, I'm here to sign up for the military. And then the people signing them in were all gays. They took those jobs. Yeah. And so they go, hey, where are you from? And they're like, I am from a small town about 30 miles outside Montgomery, Alabama. And they're like, so you're gay? They're like, what? And they're like, and then they're, for the first time, like, and then those people who checked them in took care of them. They're like, oh, dude, there's more like you.
Oh, dude,
and
that rules.
Like, what do you mean there's more like me? And like, we know what you are. We're one, too. There's thousands of people in the military.
Dude.
So it was a coming out party.
That fucking rules. That's
right,
awesome.
But until then,
yeah, they just lived with
like,
it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm fucked.
Had
I'm
no
the only
idea.
One.
Yeah, I was scared. Like, if I had seen, that's why, like, I would love to learn to talk about it on stage. Because if I had seen a comedian, I didn't know what stand up was then either. So I wasn't watching stand up. But were I to catch a stand up set and someone was talking about that, it would change my life. It would have changed
normalized
my life.
Normalized it,
probably. Yeah, it would have made me feel so much less alone. Because I felt alone. I felt it was true despair.
Did you masturbate?
Not till later.
Yeah, when I masturbate, I felt the same way as what you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is evil. I know it's wrong.
Wow.
But once I realized what it was.
Yeah, it was so evil, I wouldn't even do it.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. I used to like, fuck the floor.
Yeah, I would do that.
You do that? Yeah, fucking the floor rolls, like, dude.
Yeah, oh, hell yeah. Or a couch or something like that.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll fuck the shit out of a couch, dude. I'll fuck the shit out of a bed.
Not the middle. Not the, like, the
no,
the
no,
hole.
No, no,
it's
no,
it,
no,
you
no,
let
no,
your
no.
dick, let's say your chest is here, you let your dick like this.
No, I'm trying to fuck my dick up. Yeah. I'm trying. Oh, dude, that was the best. That rule, dude. Fuck, dude. Yeah, that's why I didn't spank off. I found something way better.
I used to, like, rub it like this against my jeans.
Oh,
like,
I should have. I mean, yeah.
And then it would bleed. And I'm like, oh, this
dude.
Is a problem. Yeah.
I'm glad I never applied the OCD to jacking off or to that. That
that's
that rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was lonely, man. I would go to my, I would live in fear of when I was alone, because then I couldn't, because when there were people around, I had to hide it. And I found ways to hide it. But when it was bedtime, I would go, and this was just my existence from like 10 or 11 to 15 or 16. Every night I would go, and at least once I inherited my older brother's room, and I would go, and it would suck because say it's like I'd go to bed whenever, 10 o'clock school night. I don't know. My parents were pretty like religious, strict about all that. And, I'd turn the light off and I'd go through that whole process again. Up in the height, it would get in the thousands though, where I'm turning it on and off, swallowing and then blinking. You had blinking into it too. And so if you don't swallow, blink, and turn the light off right while thinking the right thing, then it multiplies and you have to do it like 100 more times or something. So I would be standing by the light switch, doing that for sometimes I could do it in 25 minutes. That was a good night. But usually it was a couple hours of just standing by my light switch before I could go to bed. Sometimes 5 hours.
That's a movie version. The light switch is a movie version thing.
It's one that's more familiar. Yeah, yeah. And but the thing is, it's hard to sometimes make it. I understand this is all sounds weird. It's hard to sometimes explain OCD. It's easy to write it off as like, okay, yeah, that sucks that you had to do that. But, you know, turning off a light switch isn't the end of the world. Like, it's easy to write it off. But what's happening is the whole time my mind is in a vice lock. My mind is being squeezed. I'm in the middle of a panic attack. Yeah. And if I don't do this right, the reality that your brain presents to you is that this is real. If I don't get this right, until I get this right, okay, my parents are going to die in a car crash.
So then you have to do the punishment if you don't get it. So where does that come in? Why do your parents die in a car crash?
I don't know. Because I thought it, and my evil fucking bully of a brain said, "Oh, well, that's definitely going to happen. If you don't do this, you have to clear this thought of your parents dying in a car crash, or
damn,
or so they really will."
For the normal person, the only thing similar to that is, I made fun of retards. If I have a kid, they're going to be retarded.
Oh, I think about that one a lot.
But then there's But then there's a safety in that, like, oh, too late. It's happening already.
Yeah, I already have a retarded kid.
Jump in. Yeah.
Oh, dude, if I have a retarded kid, I'm doing so many retard jokes. I don't even have to worry about it anymore.
I mean, it gives you such
free
license.
Free pass.
I know better than anyone that they are not getting offended with this.
Yeah. Yeah, but so that it is agonizing. It is a real. It is. It's easy to say like, oh, that's not that bad because it's just standing there and it's time consuming. But it gets worse and worse. And as I swallow, like you run out of spit.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And so it hurts to swallow. Your mouth gets dry and you start gagging on the dryness. And you sometimes like then you I would like stop and I have to wait like a few minutes just breathing real hard. Until I could get enough spit in my mouth to swallow again. And I would sit there realizing my parents are going to die in a car crash and I'm 200 swallows away from stopping that. And right now I'm sitting here panting and I can't muster up a swallow. And that's like just true despair.
Did you ever have any things where it's like you figure out the punishment?
Yeah.
It wasn't always parents dying in a car crash, was
no,
it?
No, it was often something bad happening to family members or people close to me or myself being possessed by like the devil or something like
was
that.
Was it always... a supremely negative thing, or was it ever like my dad's going to lose his wallet?
No, it was never anything like that.
No, nothing.
No,
small.
No, nothing small like that. Fuck my dad's wallet. I would have gone to bed.
Yeah, well, you know, some negative. I don't know, but you know.
I get what you're saying.
But like, did you ever not fulfill the terms and then see whether or not it happened?
I think maybe twice in my life that's happened, and it felt so freeing. Later on, I remember. I think later on, somewhere in my early 20s, there was a moment where I think I just got too exhausted and just kind of collapsed, and I was like, so be it. And whatever, I don't remember what it was that I was battling, but there was something like, I was on eggshells for a few days, like, it's going to happen, it's going to happen, and it didn't happen. And you'd like to think that that would just cure me. It didn't, but that moment was nice. That moment was a good moment, but it still reset.
You weren't like, oh, hold on.
Yeah, you'd think it would, right? And I was like that, but it my brain chemistry didn't just change all of a sudden. It got me again, you know? But I would switch the lights, but then once that was over, like I said, every now and then, if I was lucky, it would be a half hour. Sometimes it would be 2 hours. Sometimes it would just be the whole night. I would have to go to bed, and if somewhere on the way to my bed, which is, you know, 4-3 feet away from me, I accidentally brushed my stereo or whatever, like my little my nightstand, then I have to stop there and I have to start the whole process all over again, touching the nightstand and thinking about the right thing. So sometimes halfway between the light switch and bed, I would just be standing there for a couple hours doing that.
This reminds me of, you ever see movies where they go back in time at like Jurassic era?
Park?
What?
Oh, sorry. Jurassic Park. I thought you were using Jurassic Park as an example.
No, but they go back to dinosaur times.
Hell yeah.
And
Land
you realize,
of the Lost.
Like, oh shit, if I stepped on a butterfly,
yeah,
it's going to change. So you have to like, what did I do wrong? I have to fix it. Which step did I go on?
Dude, if I went back in time, fuck. Yeah. That would be miserable.
This all reminds me of that, though.
Yeah, yeah. There's no light switches back then, though.
Right, yeah.
I got to fucking invent the light switch.
Because I'm like, if you're like, oh, I got to swallow, let me get a drink of water. You're like, do I have to now retrace my steps backwards?
Yes. Yeah. I would be scared to get a drink of water because then while I touch the glass, I'd think about something. And then I have to just keep drinking water until
it's
clear.
Bro.
Yeah. And then, so hopefully I'd make it to bed. On a good night, I would get in my bed within 2 hours.
Yeah.
And once I got in bed, I have to say my prayers. And, you know, because you have to say your prayers. But I'm a good Christian boy. And I would say it. But then I have to not think about the devil the entire time I'm praying. Or my brain would tell me, oh, you're praying to the devil. So you're going to get cancer and bad things are going to happen.
Wow.
So I would say my prayer. I would pray for, like, my friends and my family and just try to fucking get through it, but like clockwork, there's the devil. My brain wants me to lose, so it would throw that in there, and then I have to pray like two more times, the same thing that I talked about, and it can get in the tens and the twenties, the hundreds. But prayer, it's like, and then I would tell myself like, okay, but I can't just go through the motions of prayer because that's sacrilegious. I have to mean it every time.
You can't just like, oh, and Jesus, then please,
yeah, and then but then I'm like being a jerk to God. Right? Like, I'm like, sorry. And I have to, like, sincerely pray this thing, but I felt like I was being sacrilegious because I was profaning this sacred ritual. And I would swallow then, and the same thing would happen. Blinks,
damn,
swallows. And for some reason, this happened with the prayers more than other things. Mm-hmm. I would have to, if I breathed in and thought of the devil, it's like, oh, fuck, there's the devil in me. I have to breathe out. So what I would have to do is I would have to say the prayer, you know, four times, say if early on, four times to cancel it out, and I would have to blink right, and I'd have to swallow right, and I'd have to be exhaling the entire time, the entire prayer, which is hard to do. I'll try.
You have to learn how to breathe slowly.
Yeah, try breathing out, swallowing, and breathing, like keeping a steady It's like,
yeah, you got to stop breathing while you're swallowing. Yeah,
and I guess I would allow myself that, but I couldn't. So I would just be sitting there, and I'd have to say my prayer, exhaling and swallowing and blinking, and then after
it does get harder. It's harder to swallow. Yeah. I have to do it 3 times in a row,
right? Yeah. And then every time, so I would end up doing. I'd just breathe out, and then I would just sit there and I'd gasp for air, just
because you go until it's way past.
Yeah, and I would just do that until the sun came up, and then I would go to school.
You were good at hiding it, which yeah. is a lot of kids do that.
Yeah.
There was a server, she was a greeter at the stand, and I noticed she had, the old stand, I noticed she had like a, she had like, her style was like to have like wrist coverings.
Oh, and would she
cutter.
Self-harm things?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I
asked her once, and it was like, how long you been a cutter? And she was just like, what? Like...
She
had to figure it out.
She didn't know that you knew.
I just knew the signs.
Yeah,
I've seen it before. So it's like, I've seen some of the signs. So it's like.
Yeah, I never had the cutting thing. I will say that like where it gets scarier with OCD.
That's self-punishment.
Yeah, I've never had the self-harm thing. Right. And what I will say is it's where it gets really scary. Like I remember when I was, 14 or so, like accidentally burning myself on the stovetop. And I had to do it 4 more times.
Why?
To clear it out. Because I thought about the devil.
So you had to put your hand on the stovetop?
Mm-hmm. It was not full hand, no, but it was like the burner rings. Area or like a pot that was heated, like the bottom part outside where it's scorching hot. If I accidentally touched it and thought about it, then I had to like touch it. I'd go quick as I could, but it definitely would like affect me and like, and I think I once accidentally cut myself, and I had to cut myself a couple more times because of that.
But okay, but that's different than what cutters do. Yeah, because it was wrong, and they had to punish themselves.
I was not
themselves.
Like, I need to cut myself. It was, I accidentally cut myself. The devil is in this cut. I need 2 more cuts to cancel that out.
It was just the OCD.
Yeah, it was just the OCD as far as I know.
Did you ever have to do anything fun?
No, you know.
Like, I mean, like...
Oh,
like,
yeah, I wish. I
threw a baseball.
I tried to write a bit about that. I actually tried to write a bit about that, where it's like, just something about, like, it never was anything fun. It was never anything, like, I need to eat too many cookies is what I need to do.
That's how you overthink it, or, like, you outthink it, where you're like, devil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're okay? Mm-hmm. Now I have no choice.
Yep, I guess I got to eat all these cookies then.
Was there a time limit on when you had to do this stuff? Could you be like, shit, I got to, like... wash my hands 4 times now, but your mom's calling you to dinner. It's like, hey, don't forget, when you get out of dinner, wash your hands 4 times.
What would happen then is, yeah, or I would, or sometimes say it was bedtime, they'd yell at me because I have to go, like, not yell at me, because they were great, they weren't, like, mean or anything, but, like, if I was washing my hands a bunch and I realized, okay, this is looking weird, I need to go to bed now, or they're going to start asking questions, I would transpose it. I would be like, okay, well, I have to do some other ritual in the bedroom to make up for this. And it has to be something more exhaustive than that, because you're allowing yourself the privilege of moving, transferring it. You have to pay tax on that, I guess, and like make it a worse thing than the thing you came from.
Can't be an even trade, because then it's like, no.
Because then it's, no,
you
got to
give them something.
No, no, that's the devil wins that way.
Damn.
Yeah, it was brutal.
When did you first see that that you weren't alone, that it was like a thing?
Oh, that it was a real thing? Sometimes, I would say somewhere around...
Did you self-diagnose at first? Did you like...
Well, I would say around 15 or 16, I had like kind of a... I was always a soft boy, man. I was always kind of a soft, sensitive kid. But I had a kind of hardening happen because of all of it, I think. I kind of calloused over. Like, I guess I felt it happen. And I think it was a defense. I think it was so that I could... not live in terror of this, and it made me it fucked up my empathy. It made me less empathetic, I think, as a person. It made me care less about other people's struggles, because I'm like, well,
too
I
busy had to, struggling.
Yeah, yourself. Exactly. It's kind of like, I don't have time for that, which is not a good outlook. And but I was a kid, and when I got hard into it, it became the severity didn't go down. It's just I was tougher about it, I think. Mm-hmm. Like I still did all those things, but I was more like, okay, this is just my reality. I'm just a guy who gets beat up mentally inside all the time, and I just lived with that. It's like I guess the physical version of it would be someone who's just like constantly fights, I guess, and has the shit beat out of him all the time, and looks like all so fucked like, up, whatever. And it's like, okay, I just every block I get into a fight. That's my life, and I would, but like it's, you know, it's even today, like the hardening happened, and I moved up to Ohio. My dad got a job at like a Bible school, and we moved up to Ohio, and there's a whole new group of people to hide it from, and I got hardened, and I think somewhere along the line in like the early, like around then, I started to realize what it was. I think my little brother started to have it, but he's not like me. He's more he'll express his feelings. I don't know how to do that. So once he kind of did, I was like, oh yeah, I have that. And we actually kind of like had a bonding moment a little bit. Or his was, he had a bad too, but it was a different, his was more cleanly stuff, I think. But,
really? He did.
But, as far as I know, I'd have to talk, but, I kind of learned vaguely what it was, and that helped. I remember like,
well, this makes you not all alone.
Yeah. That helped too, but I still was just conditioned to fight it on my own and not tell anyone. So I still didn't really like, also people just like, man, in the, like where I was in Bama, it's just like a culture of like, suck it up, you know? It was like, I was afraid of being a pussy. I was terrified of being a pussy. Like, you're a man. You don't fucking, and I'll say this, dude,
suck it up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I, you know, you don't get therapy. You don't take meds. That's for fucking pussies. And, so I shouldered it all and kept it on the inside like a man's supposed to do. And,
well, that's the problem with this, like, called victim culture. Victim culture?
I get, yeah.
But, like, it butts heads with those of us who grew up saying, hey, you're supposed to suck it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a hurdle. Don't fucking talk about your hurdle.
Yeah.
Talk about how you kept running.
Yeah, exactly. That was my mentality.
And then this new culture is like, no, talk about the hurdle. And it's like, no, we don't want to.
Exactly, yeah.
Jim Abbott just wanted to talk about his perfect game. There's no hitter. He didn't want to talk about his fucking one hand the whole time.
Exactly.
What are you looking at? Your notes?
I was streaming. I was trying to see. I did actually. I wrote down. I can't find it. I wrote down the name of a book that I found that was good for it. I forget what it is. Brain Lock, I think it's called. It's a really, I recommend anyone listening, if you're dealing with this, Brain Lock is a good book. But well, yeah, when I was like 15, like I would I cried a lot because of this. Well, 10 to 15, I would cry. Like whenever I was alone, say my parents were gone, it was kind of like because I really felt like there was no way out, and I was just going to live the rest of my life like this 24/7. So I would go, I would just like, it was just kind of like a deep guttural scream, crying into my bed for just forever, just like, fucking pure despair. Like it would have sounded, I wouldn't want to hear audio of it, like out of a fucking horror movie. And after the hardening happened, I stopped crying, and I'm 35 now, so I've cried maybe two or three times in the last 20 years.
Wow.
I think it really fucked that up for me, and it's not good. That's not a bragging thing. I hate that. It's not good.
The
not
hardening.
Good. Yeah, it was the hardening is what it was.
Damn.
But in my early 20s, it got. I mean, it still was there, but I was just kind of tougher about it. Like I remember, like like my girlfriend at the time in DC. I remember, like, if I saw something where I remember, like, staying up all night next to her in the bed, just she was asleep, and I just wouldn't tell her. So I was just up all night doing the swallow thing, staring at the ceiling, thinking I'd lose my eyeballs if I didn't. I was like 23 at that point, so it didn't really go away. You know, I just kind of like, and I remember sometimes I had to like cancel some things because of it, because I was just too exhausted from it. And I would make up some other excuse. You know, I wouldn't tell them the real reason that I was canceling it.
Did you ever tell anybody about this sort of stuff?
Not really.
No.
I mean, recently I have, but not, I hid it from just about everyone. I think my girlfriend,
and girlfriends too.
Girlfriend at the time, my most recent girlfriend is the only girlfriend I told pretty much the extent of it. But, the girlfriend at the time in DC, she knew some things were wrong. And I think I even hinted at, cause it was manifesting itself. Like I even hinted like, yeah, there's some mental shit, but I really avoided it and didn't go into detail. And I didn't even tell my parents the extent of it until like a year ago, something like that.
How'd they take it?
Or sad. Because they always tried, man. They always
did. They
tried.
Feel like that they abandoned you or something?
They did not. They always tried. I hope they don't feel that. I think it's impossible for a parent to not feel like, oh, fuck, I'll let them down or something. But they didn't. I hid that shit, man.
My mom had this thing where we were just talking once about, like, when she was working, you know, for a while she didn't work and then she did. And then she was talking about how she wasn't, like, almost crying. Like, I wasn't there for you when you came home from school. I couldn't cook you meals. And I was like, oh, none of us care about that. We just made our own meals. Like, what?
Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
Like, have you been carrying this for, like, 20 years?
My grandma, Bubba, she knew. She was like,
Your grandma's name is what?
We call her Bubba. She, Bubba rules. I remember recently, or a few years ago, she told me, like, how she could just, like, yeah, you were so sad. We didn't know what was wrong. You just seemed so, and I was, like, I've always been kind of, like, a mixture of a Jekyll and Hyde type, where, like, I don't think that counts as manic depressive, but where, like, one night I'm happy, everyone, I'm like, life of the party, fun, fucking everything. And then the next day, I'm like, broody, dark in myself. And I've never liked the broody part of myself, to be honest. But that part comes out more with the OCD. But I would get caught every now and then. I remember at the dinner table, my dad, you know, we said prayer. And I guess my dad saw me during the prayer. He opened his eyes and like talked to me after. He's like, "You look like you're just in pure agony."
Damn.
And I made something up. I think I said something about like I was pretending like Three Stooges or something. I was doing facial expressions for fun. And still to this day, I get like on the train. I try to like if I try to read if it really gets too caught up in my brain if it really gets too bad, I just kind of like I do like a kind of silent scream, like a silent scream and
on the inside,
on the outside, and it's on the outside.
On the outside?
Yeah, every now and then. It's
show me a silent scream.
Just kind of like a, like that kind of, like that or something. And damn. I get caught every now and then and people look at me weird and I feel like a fucking monster, man. I hate it. But yeah, I used it every now and then. It helped. Like when I did stand up, I got obsessive about doing, like, you know, I was 22. I got obsessive about doing tons of mics and shit.
Okay, that helps.
So I turned it on itself. There are times that I've turned it on itself.
I had a therapist who was talked about depression when I was like depressed, and he was like, what good's come out of it? And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, try to think of something good's come out of it.
Did you think of something?
Yeah. I could see the world in a more honest way.
Nice.
So it helped my stand up that way. Same thing.
Nice.
I'm sure the obsessive compulsive was like, it actually would have served me to be like, you need to get up twice a day every week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have made
it helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. It helped. I'm trying to think of any more like, 20s. I knew what it was. And then there came, I'd say like 24, 25. So from like 25 till like 32, I was just kind of happy. And, I didn't like, I was, able, I really felt like by the time I was 25, 26, it was there. And it's always there. Like every time I've swallowed, my brain has, even while we've been sitting here in this conversation, my brain has put the devil on it. And I have a, now I'm better at like, I don't have to do the cancel thing. I can like, I can reject that thought. And so my like clockwork, every time I swallow, there's the devil, but I'm instantly like, nope. And I can shut it down.
Just real quick without
anything. Yeah, real quick. I'm like, nope. And like the same with like every time I open or close a cabinet, that thought's there too. But I can walk away. I really felt like I never did therapy because, you know.
Really?
I'm not. That recently, within the last year, I guess we'll end up logically here if we keep going. But yeah, until I was like, 34, I never went to therapy, cause, you know, I don't want to be a pussy. Yeah. And, also the jobs I had didn't have healthcare and I couldn't afford meds. I couldn't afford it also.
Even a lot of healthcare does not include mental
health. Exactly. Yeah. So I've never been medicated. And I guess I kind of found that a point of pride. When I was like in my late 20s, I was kind of like, I fucking beat it on my own.
There's that weird thing. Like, I want to do this on my own. I'm like, nobody does anything on their own.
Yeah, exactly. That's the mistake.
Even if it's like, here, read this book, it's still me helping you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no jobs are had on their own. That's just such a myth of like, I want to do this by myself.
Yeah. And there would still be flare ups. Like, it was still like, sometimes I would sit and read the same paragraph of a book for 5 hours. And that it hurts because I'd stopped reading a lot because of that. I'd avoid things that like...
That'll get you into the whirlpool.
Yeah, like math, like I remember like I didn't do good in school mostly because I didn't give a shit about school. But I remember like sixth grade in math class, I would take zeros on tests mm-hmm. because I would sit on my hands the entire time because I was afraid that if I picked up the pencil, the devil would control my hand and start writing like devil messages on the paper. So I would sit on my hands and I would let the teacher collect it. Either like I think once I just filled in nothing and like they spoke to me about it. So I ended up doing, I sat in my hand the whole time. And then while the teacher's collecting, I just wrote numbers real quick and dropped the pencil real quick and put it. So I got a succession of zeros on my test. And my parents were like, what are you doing? I remember once like my mom trying to teach me some math stuff.
Wait, say that again. What happened? You would do what?
I would get a zero on the test because I would not do the test. Because I was afraid that if I picked up the pencil, the devil would take control of my hand and start writing messages. And I don't want to read the devil. Whatever the devil's got.
But it would never happen. So no part
of
you.
Yeah, because I sat on my hands.
Because you did what you had to.
Yeah, I did what I had to do.
Right. It seems like a failure would have helped you.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know, if you failed to comply with the OCD,
Oh yeah.
Then it'd be like, oh, and nothing happened.
Yes.
Cool. I'm free. So I interviewed a Willie Luxemburg, a Holocaust survivor, and he was like, he said at some point he was walking a death march, and if you fell, they would just shoot you. They were on horseback or whatever next to the Nazis, and at some point he just couldn't malnourishment and disease, and he fell. He just was like, I can't go on anymore, and he fell, and it was just like, he just said he gave up, and he was like,
that sounds a lot.
Kill me, it's fine. And then he like didn't get killed, and they looked up, and the Nazis were gone.
Wow.
And he goes, I don't know how long they've been gone for. It was towards the end of the war.
I'd be hesitant to try to compare myself to that, because obviously that's a whole other level of suffering. Like, what, I didn't have to go through that, obviously. Right, but sounds but, you know, parallel. I mean,
same thing. Yeah. Like he was doing the walking because of the Nazis that...
The internal logistics are the
weren't
same.
Weren't there for at some period of time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I you'd think that would happen more. When I was too young for that to work, though, I think. I was too young to give that a try. You know, I was too young and too scared. Mm-hmm. Like, I was sitting there, where, like, my mom was trying to teach me math, and, like, they're like, okay, so just do this one problem. And she came back 3 hours later, and I was just still sitting there staring at the math because I was doing mental things in my head.
Like,
I was doing
rituals. Fucking off watching TV. She'd be like, you idiot, go back.
That's what she thought.
But doing nothing is
like... And she would be like, more like, you're mad if you tell your kid to do that, and they don't. But at the same time, she was more just kind of baffled. I remember hearing...
You're just sitting here?
Yeah, I remember hearing my mom and dad talking about it. She's like, he didn't do anything. He didn't, like, do it. And, like, discussing it, and I just, like, kind of sat there. I ended up just going in my bedroom to my hell and crying and all that shit. And, again, they tried so hard to reach me, man. They were blessed with these parents, man. But, yeah, I hit it, and... I avoided reading because of it, because I didn't want to get caught reading the same sentence for 6 hours in a row. And to this day, like, even reading, like, on the train or now, I struggle with it sometimes. I'm just better at it, but...
Are you still religious?
Yeah.
You are?
Low-key. I'm not...
You go to church?
No, but I pray. I pray regularly.
So the fear of the devil hasn't really gone away?
No, say I'm with a group of friends, and we're going to watch a horror movie... I would prefer we don't watch The Exorcist. That's the way it is right now. But it won't. I think if The Exorcist got put on, I would be uncomfortable, but I would be fine.
Trigger warning.
Yeah, I think so. When I was a kid, when I was younger, though, the idea of that, I would not go near anything like that, like The Exorcist. That was a documentary to me. I thought that was real. Because I thought I was in a world where all that was real. And then my brain, when your brain grabs you and puts you in that vice lock, it's all very real to you. Like, you think this is, and the frustrating thing is there's always a voice, a tiny voice in the back of your head screaming, this is bullshit. And that makes it worse. Because if I could just completely surrender, fine. But that voice in your head where you know, and that's the one stabilized thing that lets you know you're fucking batshit. And I'm sorry,
like,
that's insensitive.
Ridiculous.
You're not. Yeah. And I, that voice. Okay. What's that?
You're talking about yourself. It's okay. Yeah, don't worry about
that voice. Just like it sucked to know that you were. That's how you knew you were trapped. That's how you knew you were in a prison. And I just thought
because
I was.
Part of you knew this was wrong. And here I am still doing it.
Yeah.
Even though part of me knows this is like dumb.
And that makes you think like, well, I'm never going to get out of this cage. Like, this is just my life forever now.
Yeah, no part of that guy's death march was he like, are the Nazis even real?
Yeah.
You just
didn't
know that they left, but
exactly.
They were always real.
Yeah, he was a Holocaust denier in the moment.
It's not real. I mean, a couple people have died. I saw them both, but yeah. That's my favorite Holocaust denier. I was like, no, a few hundred people for sure. Like, it's not a full denial.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
yeah.
like
it's just
a
just
massive
like,
exaggeration.
Yeah, just
600 people about, but not six
million.
6 million,
come on. Give me a break.
Yeah. Like, the photos, like, a lot of those can be doctored. You're like, that's true.
Yeah.
Photos can be doctored. I have no, let's just agree to disagree, I guess. Is it genetic? Since your brother has, have you researched it at all?
So, I think, like, my dad, now that we've talked about it, my dad has told me he had like kind of like, and I think my older brother had mild ones, and I think my dad had like spurts of that kind of thing, but I think nothing on the same level. I think it is. I think all that's genetic. Like I'm careful with alcohol because my grandfather was like all that. And that's a good thing. I didn't self-medicate with alcohol. I think that would have made things so much worse if I had like turned to alcohol
to bury it.
Yeah. But because I was very careful about, I knew I was predisposed to alcoholism. I was very, and religious. So I was very careful not to fuck with
right.
that.
Well, that's an interesting thing. You've been drunk before?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So when you're drunk, your inhibitions go down, your judgment goes down. Can you fulfill your calling or do you just
what do you mean by fulfill my calling? do the OCD shit.
Do the bargain. Or are you just like, when you're drunk, do you forget it?
I'd say I'm more less prone to do it when I'm drunk.
Yeah. I would think you would be. That's what I would think without knowing. And then it's like...
So it's a good thing I didn't discover it till later. Yeah, when I could deal with it a little bit easier.
It's your medicine.
Yeah.
It's the only time I cannot think about this shit.
Yeah.
It's like when you have a bad breakup. You're like, let me get fucking ripped.
Let me get drunk as well.
Yeah, I can just not think about whatever shit. Damn.
Yeah, but alcohol, then you end up worse in the morning.
You know, in terms of like doing stand-up about it, yeah, that's a problem eventually. It's like this is making new problems. You wouldn't want to do... I mean, you're a great joke writer, but you wouldn't want to do... I mean, you've seen this. There's a trans comic I've seen and a lot of wheelchair comics and Arab comics, all disabilities. but the jokes are the jokes are almost like the only reason the jokes exist is to talk about this thing instead of the other way, instead of incidentally, you know?
Yeah.
Or Jew jokes that go one of two ways. It's like, it's fully on, it's about being a Jew, or it's about, I don't know, it's pizza, but then you're like, you have a Jew joke in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you mean.
There's two ways to do what you're doing. And I think, you ever see, what's his name, special about depression?
Goldman? Gary Goldman?
No.
Hardwick? Not Chris Hardwick. What's the other guy name? He's another glasses Gethard, guy. Gethard. Yeah.
And so,
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was like, let me cover this fucking thing I got. But it wasn't so heavy handed. He still managed to
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how to do it. I'm a punchline guy and that your focus is what is the funniest impact? And it's harder for me. Maybe it's just because I'm not used to trying to write personal stuff. Yeah. It's tough for me to try to make it funny. I've tried to do it on stage and I'm just it's not funny enough. It's not, I can't make it funny enough.
Close to it is hard. I tried doing that early on with and I lived in Israel for a couple of years, trying to make a Palestinian-Israeli joke, and it came off like this. This was 2 years in when I wasn't a very good comic. Yeah. And it was the Israelis, they want peace, and the Palestinians are fucking animals. They're fucking animals who will never accept peace, and they deserve what they fucking get. I'm like, well, that's not all right. Need some more time. It's tough to make something funny when you're too close to it. Like, you've seen comics make almost hacky jokes of OCD and I don't have OCD. And
it's that kind of, when you, it makes it too cheesy. And I'm trying to portray the weight of it. And you can't, when you're being punchliney, it's good. Cause I do want to, I kind of do want to take the power away from it. Cause I'll say when I was that's what gave me a love of kind of dark comedy. When I was in my teens, I had no idea what stand up was. I didn't have cable or anything like that. If you'd asked me what stand up was, I'd be I don't know. I would vaguely think about Seinfeld in between the show.
So glad they dropped that.
Yeah. But that was all I knew. I was kind of why is this? I remember I used to love the show Life with Louie, the cartoon show, Louis Anderson's cartoon. Louis Anderson. And I loved it. And so I was a kid and I saw him, Blockbuster Louis Anderson, and I was like, "Mom, it's Louis, let's get it." It was his stand-up, and then I put it on, and it was just, I was like, "This motherfucker's just talking to me. What is this bullshit?" I was so mad. I was like, "What is this bullshit?" I just, the concept of stand-up was fucking retarded to me.
No show. It's too
simple.
I
was like, "This is not a cartoon."
He gave me a Life with Louis pin. He did. Happening? He was like, "Oh, here."
Oh God, I love that show. Cool. But I love dark comedy because I do think there's all this. I'm open to a lot of the criticism of dark comedy, to be honest. If I'm going to be honest at this point, I do think that there are some people who because they've never experienced anything bad, it's just of course you can say this. But then there's also the flip side of that where I really felt it was kind of healing to me it gave me a kind of say that there was, again, I didn't know what stand-up was, but just myself making dark jokes or being around friends, just something dark, something really kind
of your mom died of cancer.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. But making a joke about it really made me feel it all the darkness felt connected, and it made my darkness feel less threatening. You know what I mean? To make a joke, even about a very dark thing that wasn't my OCD, my personal despair, just kind of laughing in the face of the abyss like that really fucking helped me. It was real healing. And also I would act out when it'd be shocking. That's when I became a shock jock, basically. And in those moments when I was acting out and getting attention, I was not thinking about my OCD. I think the OCD, I think just being in that dark place did give me my love of offensive comedy and shocking.
Yeah, it's
shit.
A weird thing. The offensive comedy, people it's offensive. And you're like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's not incidental. It was on purpose. And I do like the laughing in the face of things. Mm-hmm. One, it's to, I don't know, it's a teacher's own, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Your mom, my mom, they're not going to like that dark shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I really enjoy like a moment like, oh, Jesus, dude.
Yeah, I love
that
it.
That guy's mom died. A good roast joke.
Yeah.
Where you're like,
yeah.
His mom died last week of cancer and you're hitting him with it now? Like, are you
crazy? It's great.
But it's like,
oh my God.
Look,
I
wouldn't do it, but good for you.
When battlers would go after my OCD, I loved it. I fucking loved it. It felt so good because I spent so many years afraid to tell anyone about it. So when I would tell them before, you know, when you give each other dirt on it, when I would tell them that, it felt great to be able to tell them that I had OCD and then have them make fun of me for it. It was great.
See an angle on humor on it too.
What's that?
You can probably see an angle on humor on subject if you're like, because they're not close to it, so they can do the distance joke, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is where most dark comedy comes from. It's like, I didn't know your mom. So I can make fun of her getting raped and killed because I don't.
If it was my mom,
I probably wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, the dark shit's like I'm pretty, especially these days. I'm pretty fucking like lefty, all that. But comedically, I love like Legion of Skanks and shit. Like I just like I think it's like the I guess it's like the S&M of comedy. You know what I mean? Like it's we're a bunch of just let us be weirdos. Like there's like a thing where it's like yes, there are. I do think there's a section of the audience that's laughing for the wrong reasons, and I'm not comfortable with them. But at this, you can't let them ruin. Like
you know about New
probably,
Order and the Nazis.
There's tons of people. What
you know about New Order and the Nazis? Skinhead fans.
Oh yeah. So shit like that. Yeah,
what am I supposed to do? Not play? They misinterpreted my song.
Yeah, they're idiots.
I don't want them
what
here,
are you
but
do?
They're here.
And dark comedy, of course, is going to bring in some psychos. But like S&M porn, there are people watching that for the wrong reason. There are probably plenty of people who just want to see a woman get the shit beaten out of them.
Right.
But you don't shut down S&M. You let the people who are doing it responsibly have their fucking kink. And this is our kink, right? This dark comedy shit. Kink.
And by the way, we're already relegated to fucking 80s heat rooms and basements.
Yeah.
Because
well, it's like fine. Like we're not the kings anymore. It's no longer the main comedy. It's another genre of comedy, which is fine. But let us at least have the genre. Yeah. You know what I mean?
We're here by ourselves. We're not even taking it to you.
Exactly.
And someone so showed it to me. He's like, you shouldn't have showed it to
you. Yeah. Yeah. And also, you're fine. I'll bet you saw it and you're fine. Yeah. You know?
You're looking to be super angry. All right.
Sorry. Yeah. We're going.
I always go down that road.
We're going off on a whole other thing.
I'm talking to people. Don't care about the people who do care.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just like, it's just still enjoy. So you ever see, what's Hannah Gadsby's special?
Nanette? I never watched it.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it because I was like, I'll probably not like it and the world doesn't need another person who doesn't like it.
Yeah. I was talking about it and then I was like, on a podcast, like an intro. I'm remembering sort of like me doing an intro from an airport, outside an airport.
Yeah.
When it was just an audio podcast. And then I was like, and then just shitting on it, starting to shit on it because everyone around me was shitting on it because it's not mainstream comedy.
Yeah.
So we shit on everything that's not
mainstream. Of course. Default setting is shit on things. That's my setting, man. Yeah. Even things I like and I respect, it doesn't mean I hate.
Yeah, it's like I have to shit on it.
Yeah.
If we go around the room and you're like, I don't know, talking about whoever, whoever. Sam, that guy's Sam.
Yeah.
And like, oh, what a great guy. We're so generous. Somebody else like, yeah, I love him. Someone's got a smile on his face. Somebody else like, yeah, he gave me this thing. It was so fucking cool. And then it gets to me. I'm like, fuck him.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's fun.
It's way more fun.
And I got fucking made fun of all. Well, the thing is, I went to a black high school. So, like, you get a thick skin, I guess. Like, I've never been hurt by a joke or an insult.
A black high school.
Yeah, what'd you think I said?
Black guy school. Which I guess is the same thing. But,
I guess. But like, you know, I got
to
make fun of
you. Yeah, you got to get a thin skin.
Yeah, thick.
Because they're going to make fun of you.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's great. Yeah.
So anyway, in her thing, she a lot of it was covering. Oh, so while I was doing this intro, kind of shitting on it because that's the stance. And I was like, what am I doing? I haven't even seen it. Are you out of your mind already? And I'm like, put all this shit on hold. Let me go watch it. And it was actually way more interesting than people were giving her credit for.
It seems interesting.
Yeah. But one of the theses is in it, and it's more theater than straight stand-up, so people are judging it on the wrong.
Yeah, I have no interest in trying to label it, I guess. Just so you like it or you don't, you know?
Same thing that, what's his name went through, that, who's the black guy who made all the noises?
No, damn,
that's correct, but that's not
but
what
not
I'm talking about. He had the reverb machine. In the stand-up world
Minnesota
for a while.
Guy, yeah. Reggie.
Reggie Watts.
Yes, Reggie Watts.
And people kind of got mad at him. Bo Burnham also. They got mad at him because they were in comedy clubs.
Yeah.
And they were doing this thing that kind of was humorous, but not straight comedy.
Yeah.
And then both of them moved to they were in and out of the comedy world.
Yeah.
The comedy club world. So it's like, who cared? But people got mad because, like, you're being labeled as this thing that I am. And it's not exactly this thing. So they were just angry at the label.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. But she was like, I can't really make fun of being a beat up on lesbian woman and tell the whole fucking story of this and be funny. Because the end of this is, I got the shit kicked out of me a bunch of times. It's just not that funny. I would say it's way more difficult. Miss Pat talked about molestation.
Love her, love her.
Being molested at like 13, 14, 15 by uncles.
Jesus.
And you don't even
Christ.
Notice it until after. It's like, wait, did she just talk about a rape of herself?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like somebody raped her? And you're like, oh, yeah, but she's not doing any of that woe is me. It's possible. It just takes a really talented person
and also,
to get it done. So I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I didn't mean it that way.
That was so good, though.
Way.
I know you didn't, but it was so fucking good. So fucking good. God, that was good. That rules. Well, yeah, you're talking about Miss Pat. Like, so many... Also, another reason I kept quiet about it is because, like, I'm also conditioned to just think so many people have it worse. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't want to be a whiny little bitch, you know?
I'm doing it now for COVID.
Yeah.
I'm finding it actually kind of like nice where I'm like, fuck, whatever thing got canceled. I was supposed to go, you know, a music festival this summer and I was supposed to do this. I'm like, fuck. And then you're like, oh, hold on. I'm actually in a great position.
Yeah, yeah. Things
I have
are
enough
great.
Money where it's like, I'm not going to go broke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
It actually just focus on the positives. It's way easier
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, I wonder how you would do it on stage where it's not just like dumb hacky jokes about OCD, but also not. Woe is me-ism.
Yeah, I tried it. I tried a couple different formulas. I tried, like, I think I had one about, like, it never got there, so I didn't really do it much. But, yeah, something about how, like, I'd be pissed. Like, I did it because I thought I'd get cancer, and, like, I'd be pissed if I actually got cancer the way I thought I would. Because, like, someone else, it's like, how'd you get cancer? Like, how'd you get cancer? Like, man, fucking smoked too much, drank, ate pussy. What about you? And I'm like, yeah, button on a crock pot. Like, like, but I never, it all fell into a type of delivery that's just not my delivery. And I don't have that confidence of it. Because, you know, you have your cadences and you're very confident in your own cadences. And, like, I can't do the fucking, the personal cadence is a different thing than what I've done, which is use comedy almost as a mask. Like, I hide behind
it. You're a roasty comic.
Yeah, I hide behind, I don't let people, Greg Giraldo is my guy. The roasts were all, it was always my dream to write for the comedy roasts, to be honest. But
and they never let you, even though you were both coast champions.
We can get into that if you want.
That is
crazy. We can get into that.
Well, luckily, almost every single person who held you back has been fired from their job now.
Well, I mean,
but like, how ridiculous was it that they had this roast battle championships? They had it in New York, first LA, and then New York. And it got famous in LA because I put him over. No, but like, you were the New York champion.
Yes.
And right there, you should be like, well, let's put him on the roast. And then they had an
unification.
Unification belt where the best of New York, they had a little tournament, went against the best of LA.
Yeah.
And you won that, which meant you were the best lower level roaster in the country. And they're like, for sure, you should be on the roast. And then it's like, I get politics. You're ugly. I get it. I'm not a celebrity.
Well, I would like to write for it. At least put me in the room.
Let you write for it. At least let you write for it. You're crazy. If you don't let you write for it, then why are you even having this tournament? You can't even be part of it? And what was your reason? You made too harsh a joke for something?
Well, I mean.
What the fuck? Oh, go ahead.
If we want to get into all the roast battle shit.
It bothered me at the time.
Myself as well. Well, I never wanted a writing job. I want a writing job for healthcare, basically. But I don't relate. Like, all these, this is a bunch of like sweater wearing motherfuckers. Like, I don't relate to them. I don't want to be in a room with a bunch of nerds. But the Comedy Central roast is a different thing.
Because
I would
go dark.
Love to be in a roast.
And
yeah,
what's
yeah.
his fuck is not, sorry, that came out. What's his face? Who does the writing for the roasts, like everyone.
Jesse Joyce. He's awesome. I love him.
He's dark.
Him and Giraldo are just my heroes.
Yeah, so it's like, it ain't all those sweater wearing guys. It's some dark. The point
there
of
are
it
some,
is like,
okay.
Let's get deep.
I'm
well,
saying
Jesse
this,
Joyce.
I'm saying this having never been in a writer's room. So
no, I'm saying the roast would be a place
yeah,
where
would
you wouldn't
be
get
a different
that.
One. Because, like, yeah, other writers, Jezelnik I don't want to.
And Schumer back then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, yeah, they're go for it.
But sure. Yeah, like other regular writers room now, it just seems like a bunch of fucking like Elizabeth Warren weirdos. I'm not trying to fuck with that. But like, so yeah, when I first did the roast battle, I applied my OCD for good. It was like that kind of thing. It was like, oh, I found it. My mind was, the contours of my mind were kind of set up for that kind of thing. Like thinking of comebacks, thinking of all the different angles someone could come at for me. And I loved it, man. I fucking loved it. It made me, I have a blast writing to Joe's jokes. It's the only time I'm fucking, it doesn't feel like work. This is going to sound maybe arrogant, I guess, but like if I'm good at one thing, like I just write it and it just kind of falls out and whatever. And, it was great, and I loved it, and it's the best time I've ever had for a while. And then there came a point where, like I said, I've never really told anyone about this, honestly. You know, for those years from 25 until like I started doing roast battle, and I was happy, and I still had the OCD. The thoughts were always there, but I really thought like I fucking beat it. This shit will never own me again. I fucking won without therapy. I was so fucking like sure. And as the roast battle went on, there came a point where I got sick of it and I was tired of it, and it was taking away from my stand up. And I think that there's a point where if you're only known as the roast battle guy, it hurts you because you're not going to book you for sets. And I just wanted to do stand up. And
we all thought, we're like, great, those guys are great at roast. Can they even do a 20 minute set?
Exactly.
Have you seen either? And some of their stand ups was bad.
Oh, really?
It wasn't good stand up. But really? They were good, at least on the LA side. Really? They were good at those roasts. And you see them on stage, you're like, damn, you are immature really? On stage.
I love all those guys. So. Well, a lot of people, a lot of people started off. I had been doing stand up for like a decade. You know what I mean? I've been doing it since I was like 19.
Okay.
So I got lucky in
the. Were
you
with Mullen in DC?
I knew him.
Okay.
Mullen, I've known Mullen for like 12 years. I've always kind of respected him too much to try to be friends with him. Yeah. I was always just kind of like, I'm not funny enough to be friends. I don't want to bug this guy, but he's I think he's like the funniest person on the planet.
Yeah, I like Mullen a lot.
But I've known him. I think he likes me, and I think, you know, there's a mutual, like, we like each other. So I've been doing it for a while, and I got kind of lucky that my joke style just fit in with roast battle anyway. I was always like, man, I think I didn't know how to do it. I was like, how do I break into the clubs? How do I do this roast battle? I think I'd be good. I watched the roast. Greg Giraldo was my hero. I was like, I think I can fucking do this. I really think I'd be good at writing jokes. And then my friend JP McDade asked, like, because there's a drop. I was like, hey, you want to battle me? And so we battled, and it went as perfectly as the first battle between me and JP McDade went.
JP was a good roaster too.
He's amazing. He's amazing. It went as well as it could. And suddenly I got known as, like, people were like, oh, he's roasting. People would hit me up, and I named my podcast The Roast Ghost, partly because I like cheesy nicknames. I think it's like stupid.
Yeah.
It's meant to be tongue-in-cheek, but also because I don't get hired officially, but I ghostwrite for a lot of people.
Do you really?
I do. I've had jokes reach on the last three Comedy Central roasts, I've had, you know, the comics, they know better than the producers. So I've gotten, and no disrespect to the people who were in the writer's room, because they were great too, and they deserve it, I'm sure. Like, God bless you. But I've had, my jokes have made the air the last three roasts, because people have, you know.
Well, so Tony started with writing jokes for Jeff.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
Uncredited roast for Jeff.
Okay.
Where he was like, come on over. This is when he was a brand new comic.
Okay.
He was like, come on over, let's write together.
Nice.
And the benefit was I got to see one of my jokes on TV.
Yeah,
I'm a
two-year
comic, and I wrote a joke.
Oh,
TV.
Dude, it's such a cool. I get giddy for it. So
you ever hear Metzger's story with Patrice writing for the roast?
Yes. That's crazy. Yeah. That's a good story.
And he's just like, I'm not talking to you writers. Let me talk to Kurt.
That rules.
He's a comic.
That fucking,
you guys aren't
rules,
comics.
Dude, that fuck rules. Off. So that's like a consolation, is that being known as a roast joke writer, I have gotten
people
paid.
Would call. Yeah, I would call you. That's crazy not to be like, let me just take these guys who you happen to hire. And I have these guys who I know are good at this specific thing, and no, it's just like that undervalued. Dave Smith has an idea on the
love Dave.
The I don't care for him, but like the he's got good ideas though. But you know the wage gap,
yeah,
myth, not myth. I don't know enough to know.
Yeah, I don't know. But
he goes, here's the problem with it. So people aren't hiring women. They're hiring women for 77 cents on the dollar that they hire men for the same job. And the
way too much.
Run companies. Yeah. People who run companies, these intelligent businessmen, you're telling me that they can get the same labor for 77% of a man's job, but they're so misogynist that they refuse to get, they're willing to ship off labor to Indonesia, but they will only hire an overpriced male? He goes, that just doesn't compute to what you're talking about. So, like, there's people who slip through the cracks. That I'll try to take for a while. Like Joe List used to be opening for somebody, and then he went through some shit, and New York Times wrote an article about him, and that guy couldn't do stand-up for a couple years. And so I was like, List, want to open for me? And it was like, slip through the cracks. Because, you know, the other guy fucking jerked off the wrong times or whatever.
Yeah,
but like, if they were like, or Adrian, she's never done her fucking work to be like a fucking touring comic. So I'm like, fucking work for me then.
Yeah.
If I knew a solid roast joke writer who wasn't working, it'd be like, fucking sweet.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Just grab that shit.
Anytime, hit me up. I love it. I enjoy it. And I love to, I've gotten better at like, yeah. It's good. But
what
like,
do they say? Why they wouldn't take you?
Well, so roast battle, like I said, First, it was great. It's still, to this day, even once I wanted to lose, there was a point where I secretly wanted to lose every time. I remember we talked about it.
Like,
how
long is this going to go on? Because there's no benefit to...
I was waiting for the TV set to come, and they kept pushing that back. Like, it was like, when is... So I kept on... I didn't want to do it anymore. I was sick of it, but like, yeah, like I said, first, like, I liken it to, like, this is gonna make it all sound kind of cheesy, but I'm a cheesy dude. So, like, I liken it, like, I was in a decade just in open mics, basically. And I always said my biggest credit is people with credits respected me. Like, I was very talked up, and like people like Joe List and Norman, always sweet to me, always helped me out. So, like, there was this, like, I was like, yes, I am good at this. I had that,
respected.
Like, yeah, I had that, but at the same time, I liken it to, like, the way, like boxers, like, someone, like, trapped in, like, a terrible situation, neighborhood, their only way out was just to fight their way out. Yeah. I saw, like, I had to fight my way out of the open mics through roast battle. Like, I had to keep on winning and
get... Well, the stand, that was the way into the stand,
yeah,
for sure.
And I got on people's radars. It did... I got very little, but compared to what I have, it had that gotten for, like... years at that point.
Because you're also
saying
Big J is judging you. Mike Lawrence is judging
you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
there's people.
Oh, you're really good, man.
They're seeing it. It's an opportunity.
I learned a lot of younger
comics
through roast battle.
Yeah, so I loved it, and, like, I enjoyed it so much, and then they put the belt in, and I'm a diehard wrestling fan. I like MMA too, but I'm a diehard wrestling fan. So it's everything I love combined. And I remember one night, like, Bama lost the 2016 championship, and I was Alabama Crimson Tide. And,
Bama.
I'm an
2016?
Idiot. Yeah, yeah. Not the year after is when the one you were at, where Tua came in. Oh, the greatest moment of my life.
Oh my
God.
What
God
a
damn.
Fucking game that was.
But the year before that broke my heart. And so I was really sad. So I decided I was going to win the belt because of that night. So then, like, the next day I asked if I could battle Zach. They said yes. And I was like, okay, I have to win. I have to win big. And
you had
I have
a streak
to-
going at the time.
I had enough to look. I pointed to some things and was like, hey, because of this, I think I could. And they're like, yeah, that makes sense. So, I did that, and I knew
you couldn't just get Zach Amico.
No.
Like,
you had
the
to
fuck
earn
are
Zach.
You?
Yeah,
there was
Zach's
a common
God.
Thing
I love
we've
Zach.
Talked about a lot where a roast battler will, like, have something and then, like, Michael Che will say, be judging and he'll make a joke. And then somebody who's 2-0 be like, well, how about you?
Yeah.
You roast battle Michael Che. It's like, fuck off.
Like, what? No. And then you can be like, oh, you scared? Like, no, I just, why would I do this?
I don't know anything about you.
Yeah, yeah.
And
get the fuck
I have
out
a Wikipedia
here.
Page. So, of course, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So, Zach. So, yeah, I had to earn that. And I think I had, by that point,
no
earned the title shot.
Yeah. Deserved title shot.
And I knew I had to win big, and I knew I had to do a promo after. I didn't know exactly what I was going to say. I knew I had to do the LA thing because I knew just, like, how rare opportunities in this business was. And I knew I had to spend a decade.
And it was being streamed.
Yeah,
so
it was being
recorded.
Live streamed. So I did my wrestling promo. I did the shout out. And then the LA thing happened, and it was great. And LA is fucking,
what do
I
mean,
love
LA
them.
Thing happened.
I called out LA.
You said,
yeah, I was like, let's do that. I was like, let's do this. Let's do a New York versus LA thing, basically.
Do you have the promo? What's that promo?
It's on,
on
YouTube.
It's on YouTube?
Yeah, yeah, you can
what's
look
it
up.
What's it on? Your account or something?
No, it should be on the Stan's account. Yeah. It should be like Eli Sayers calls out TV producers, and, like, I called out Comedy Central too and told them to fucking to put me on TV. Like, I did. I went all wrestling tongue in cheek.
Any final words from the champion?
First of all, give it up to Zach. One of the best roasters. Second of all, where's the camera? Where's the damn camera? I know Comedy Central watches these things. Look, I appreciate y'all put me on the preliminary rounds. I've used it as a credit. Now, put me on the real roast battle show, and you can use me as a credit when I take your shit to another level.
Oh, wow.
Yeah!
Wow.
Bring L.A. out here.
Whoa.
We'll show those pieces of shit that roasting is about more than dressing up in a stupid costume and dancing around like a moron, delivering mediocre jokes your friends wrote for them.
Whoa.
Yeah! The best roasters in the world are in New York City.
Holy
and the best
shit.
Roasters in New York City are at the Stand fucking Comedy Club.
Whoa.
The best roaster at the Stand fucking Comedy Club is right fucking here.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It was all show. It was all, I'm not a fucking tough dude. It was all like fucking, but you know, LA, they're awesome. And they were like, yeah, this is fun. And we did that. And I got to go out to the Comedy Store, which was like, to this day, the belly room, that was the most fun I've ever had in my
life,
man.
That's where the wrestling really...
Oh, my God. What a great fucking room.
I really was an early lover of that thing.
And
pushed it as much as I could to people. But, like, where the waves sat, you know, and was able to get up and jump on stage, and you could see them from the side. The judges sat right above them. We always try, when we started to come to LA, to New York, we're like, how do we reproduce the wave? And we just never got that.
Yeah, they had to drop it. I remember that. Yeah. That was the thing that happened. It sucked because it was wrestling. I had to talk shit on LA, but I really loved I loved LA. And I went there. I wanted to just stay. I was like, LA fucking rules, dude. The Comedy Store rules. I love everyone here. Everyone here is nice. It's fucking awesome. Everyone's not just all
pissy and
miserable.
Yeah.
So I did that. And that was when it was fun. And somewhere along the line, it stopped being fun, and the OCD, the sickness started to come back into it in a bad way.
Oh.
And somewhere along the line, somewhere after all the LA stuff, which was again a blast, and somewhere along the line, the last few battles when I knew I had to keep doing it, because
because you were in line for a TV
spot. TV set, and you don't, and I was very realistic. I knew I was hoping for
a TV set on what, either the
Comedy Central,
the roast battle tournament or a roast.
Oh, either, but I knew that the roast was probably not going to happen. I knew that the battle was more likely. And even then, I was realistic. I knew that the best case scenario is I parlay that into, like, a little bit of stand-up momentum, maybe bookings slightly easier sometimes, or maybe, like, best case scenario, I get in that fucking writer's room finally, that Comedy Central roast writer's room that I really wanted. So I just had to keep going for that. So my mind would not let me not work my ass off on it and write a bunch and do all that. But at the same time, I was miserable and I wanted it to be over. And I secretly, every time I wanted to lose, but also even then, once I got on stage and did, it's still just the time of my life. I don't know why the word free comes to mind, but it was fucking exhilarating.
I remember us talking about it on 14th Street once.
I remember that too.
We were walking and it was like, maybe we got to come up with a way to lose without losing.
Yeah.
Or like to say, fuck it, I'm retiring. None of you deserve it. And then you can come back in 2 years when you want and be like, that's my fucking belt.
Yeah, just come back. I love that.
Losing is like after going like 6-0 as a champion or 8-0 as a champion. Yeah. And then like losing, it's like
whatever. It's part of it.
And what's the difference in winning your 6th in a row or 7th in a row? It's like the same thing. Yeah. So it's you had to lose in a way.
Yeah. By that point, I was just so like fucking, but like I got to the point where I was, I would go hole up, and instead of writing, the OCD would creep back in bad ways. I would do things that didn't necessarily help me prepare, like repeating the joke to myself a ton of times.
So you could say it well?
Yeah, but that's good, like, to a point. Like, yeah, do it 10 or 20 times, but my OCD would not let me stop there. And I would do it, and I would keep on doing it, and then the same old things came back. If I swallowed... and did it, then things would go wrong, and I would never. My career would fail. It went from the devil to just I would have no career. Because at that point, you know, again, it was a very small amount of momentum I had, but it was compared to what I had before then. It was a lot, and my brain also knew it was a dumb show that didn't matter, but my brain, you know, it did its bullying thing and convinced me everything was life and death, and I still had that voice in my back of my head being like, no, just enjoy this. This doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't even matter if you get on TV. Just fucking stop. But my brain would not let me do that. So the swallows would come back. A lot of that stuff would come back, and it got worrying. I would end up holing up to write, but a lot of the time I would just have my face in my hands doing rituals in my head. And it reminded me not quite like of like 15, but back to like my early 20s when it was still like I was tough about it, but it was really pummeling me again, and it was really wearing on me. And it got to the point where the last 3 battles or so, I was like, it just wouldn't let up. And the amount of emotional toll the prep took on me was very disproportionate to what I was actually doing. Like, don't get me wrong, I wrote a lot, don't get me wrong. And I was also driving my friends crazy running jokes by them, and I hated that, and that was part of the OCD too. And I was just miserable, and I was just in a bad place again, and I was like, I have to quit. I have to get out of this. This is not good, but I had to get the TV set first. So I kept on doing it, even though...
You're already puck committed.
Yeah, I was already committed, and I did like... it got real bad, and I just felt like I can't get back to where I was when I was 15. I can't do that. So yeah. I kept going. I did... finally, I got the TV set. I was doing Skankfest. I did the battle at Skankfest against Paul Hooper, and that was a blast. That ended up being the funnest fucking thing. Lewis has always been fucking great to me. Everyone gets mad at Lewis. I love it. Lewis has always been good to me, had my back, been awesome, helped me out more than anyone. I think a lot of comics can say
Lewis,
that.
I would say the same thing.
But he's
begrudgingly, I would say the exact same thing.
Right. He's he's a loyal, fucking honest dude.
Dude, my last one of my many like e-rages, you know, fucking everyone's mad at me things.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Lewis called me. He was like, "Hey, coming to Legion of Skanks." I'm like, "Ah, dude, I think I should just like lay low for a minute." And then he called me back like the next day. He's like, "No, no, dude, I actually been thinking about it. I actually really think you should come on Legion of Skanks and just hang out." And so, like, to remember, like, you're part of the comedy scene.
Oh, that's so nice, man.
Yeah, yeah, and it really was great.
That's what he is. He is like that. Like, I think some people don't know that, but yeah, he's great.
So dumb, though.
Well, I'm a fucking retard. I don't know.
It's on a different level, though. I get what you're saying, but, like, yeah, it's like you can't even communicate with them sometimes. The IQ difference is the problem.
Is
there a word for similar to an orangutan? Orangutan? Orangutan-like?
I don't know,
but that's what a Lewis is.
I forgot y'all have like y'all's like joke kind of beef or whatever.
I have no beef with them.
It's like, I know, but y'all like the shit. You like the shit on them. You enjoy shitting on each other. Yeah, Skankfest was fun. And
wait,
then,
so what happened to Skankfest? You challenged Hooper?
It was great. Yeah, I won, and he did amazing, and it was a great time, and I had a great time, and everyone there was really nice. And but like again, that weekend was great, but the everything surrounding it. Those days leading up, and I found out a few days before Skankfest, I found out that I got the TV set.
Hmm. What do you mean you got the TV set?
That I was going to do the roast battle. It was finally coming back.
Roast battle tournament.
Yeah, they weren't doing it comedy style. They couldn't secure a location in Montreal, so they ended up being in LA.
Oh yeah. Yeah. At the same time as Montreal was going.
Yeah.
It was so dumb. It was like, you mean when all the comics are gone? Like just do it the week before.
Are you telling me that Comedy Central doesn't know what they're doing? Would you imply that?
They just made a lot of mistakes. A lot of, like, needless mistakes. Where
you guys are cool
people, and I think you have the same...
Well, they're...
The same intentions that I do, the same goals that I do. To make comedy great, you just need to ask for help.
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing it wrong.
Well, they're all nice.
I'm
sure they're nice like family men, but it's obscene that they have any control over comics or art in any sense.
Yeah. I don't want to say who, actually, because it's whatever, but he said like...
When the mics are off, we can talk about it.
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. I'll name you a couple names after the mics are off.
They're actually... Here's the deal. They're really... They've all been fired, so it doesn't even matter. Except Ryan, who was the best guy there.
Ryan who?
Ryan Moran.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He's the only guy that actually cared about
stand-up. He's actually the one guy I remember being kind of like cool too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They were when Netflix was going to hire an assistant, I was like, get Ryan. Mm-hmm. He's your guy. He cares about the art form.
Yeah.
He would help me fight for stuff on This Not Happening to be like, they're trying to cut it out. He goes, let me see what I can do and get around, you know, whatever they're called, practices and standards and practices. He's like, we'll come up with a solution. Everybody else is like, come on, you already have a show. Stop fighting.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, we'll get that word in. We'll do our best. What was I going to say about him? Oh, so my buddy... was saying that the people at Comedy Central, he goes, the weird thing is they're really fun to drink with. They're all really fun people. They're just not good at their jobs.
No, not at all. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Except Ryan.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like in real estate or some shit. I don't know. They're supposed to be in a regular office. I don't know.
Yeah. And they just could never know their weaknesses. They could never know like, hey, I don't really know how to do this part. Can I get some help from you?
Well, also the people they like... They often like for like web shit. They like I don't know how much of them I'm supposed to be saying, but like they have their own people they hire.
They're not like
they have their people who hire as their own creatives to kind of go down there and make your thing less funny. I guess that's their goal. But they hire someone who's like. But that kind of person who's like, oh, yes, out of college, I have this and this on my resume, and so I will try to get an assistant job at Comedy Central, like, that's never a funny person. Like, the person who knows how to do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're the people that are like, oh, this is our creative people. This is fucking me. Here's the thing. Comedy Central has so many great creative people that it's the higher-ups I don't like. I think that whenever I watch a Comedy Central thing and it's not funny, or any TV thing, I no longer am like, oh, those writers aren't funny. I'm like, man, I feel bad for those writers. I'll bet they had so many good ideas that they couldn't do.
Well, remember Mulaney's show on Fox?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, this is weird. It's the very first thing any of us saw from John Mulaney that wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
He's really talented.
Yeah, and then you see this thing
that we're like, what is this? And then you want to be like, I guess he fucked up. But then the more you think about it, you're like, no, he's probably just never come in contact with network executives.
Let's change. Yeah, they fucking, you know, bastardize art and comedy. Yeah.
So you got this response. Yeah. This roast spot.
Yeah, and it's great. And I'm not going to focus too much on the battle because I don't want to... It was against, Pat Barker?
Pat Barker.
Yeah, great roast battler, great comic, great dude.
L.A.?
Yeah, yeah. It was against him, and it was he won, and he deserves it, everything. So I don't want to focus too much on that and try to, like, put a cloud on any of that. Yeah. And I got I did Skankfest. It was fun, and then I immediately hit the ground running with that, and, like, but again, it was like a week and a half or however long it was to prepare. I remember being like, it was like 3 a.m. outside. I was like trying to find a place alone. It was in like the apartment I was at the time had a backyard. I was like, but cool. I wasn't writing as much as I was, like, again, hand in
swallowing.
My hand. Yeah, swallowing and breathing and all this just torture. And I was just like, and that was when I realized, like, okay, I have to stop. I'm getting too close to back when I was 15. And, like, I thought I would never be here again. And I have to stop this now. This has to be my last fucking, the last time I ever do this TV thing. And I was just like, just get it fucking over with. And, I went, it was like, I got flown first class, which was sick. I went and I talked to Kim
and
Congdon.
Shit never gets old. You sit there, even when you get pumped up or when you're flying with a celebrity.
Me and Kim Congdon had the same experience. I talked to her about it. I went and I saw my ticket. The number was like 3, and I saw 3 in first class. And I was like, well, that's clearly a mistake. And I kept walking, like, okay, it resets for the poor people. And I showed a stewardess when I was halfway through. And she's like, no, that's first class. And I had to, like, make everyone move while I was like, sorry, everyone. Sorry. No, I was apologetic. I was sorry. I sat down and I was like, this is fucking crazy. Like, there's like a water bottle with a blue light behind it. Like, you're in a nightclub. Like, I was like, and this lady, I revealed how fucking much of a poor little piece of trash I am. I was like, I was sitting there and I seen this menu and it had all this food on it. It was delicious. And I was like, there's no price on it. Like, probably on my range, but I'll ask. And the stewardess came and he was like, will you like anything to eat? I was like, yeah, how much are these? And he's like, all of that is complimentary. And I just loudly said, stop. And everyone turned and looked at me. I was like, oh shit. Oh shit.
It's so fun. Especially when you're not used to it.
I ate the fuck out of it. They gave me a blanket. I wanted to steal it, but I was like, nah, I gotta pick. Now that I'm living this good life, I gotta act like I've been here before.
Act like you've been there. That was the biggest
thing.
I wanted
that blanket so bad.
Can I make these people believe that I deserve to be here? I don't want them to look at me like, ugh, this guy's ruining first class for us. This commoner.
And okay, so that was good. I got there.
One time I was a heavy pot edible flying with Rogan.
Oh,
so
Lord, I can't fly a pot. I'm already scared to fly.
And this lady goes, I think it was a long one. He bumped me up. I think he used to do, before he had this much money, he would be like at the gate. He'd be like, how much to bump him up? And sometimes it was like $100. He goes, then you're first class. And sometimes it'd be like $1,200. He goes, see when we land. you know, but like when I did get bumped up, I remember this lady going, would you like a cookie before we leave or a hot cookie? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, we got oatmeal raisin and chocolate chip. I was like, ooh, chocolate chip. No, oatmeal raisin. Yeah, oatmeal raisin. And she goes, do you want both? I'm like, can I have both? Yeah.
Dude, that's exactly how I am, dude. That's exactly how I am, dude. My friend Scotland Green is a great comic, and he has a joke about how, like, everyone was like on the aisle is like, I'll have pretzels, chips for me. And he's just like, I'll have all three. And then, and one by one, I watched these people wake up. And like, I'll have three as well.
Yeah, all the way behind.
Yeah,
him.
Scotland's—he's hilarious. Yeah, I was still in agony though. I was still like the swallows were—it was all back. It was all coming back, and I was scared, and I was like in hell, and just wanted it to be over so fucking bad, man. And again, I was doing all these rituals that my brain was convincing me was helping me prepare, but absolutely was taking away. And that, again, I wrote plenty. That's not excuse making. I wrote plenty. I did everything I needed to do, but the OCD part was certainly not helping. You know, it was just making me miserable. And I went and I got my fucking, hotel room. That was new to me too. It was my first time like having a hotel room waiting for me. And, I just ended up, it was the next day. And, I ended up just kind of walking around the hotel, doing the jokes in my head, but again, to where it doesn't help anymore. Cause you end up tripping on jokes no matter what. It's just going to happen no matter how many times you do it. So I was doing that and I was swallowing and I was breathing and I was like trying not to throw up and I was just like in fucking hell. And I was like, I just let this be over. Just let this be over. And it got more and more intense. And, I kept doing it, and then I got to the point where I was about to throw up, and I had to stop myself from throwing up in between every time I said it. It would be like, okay, I say the thing out loud, stop myself from throwing up, say the joke out loud, you know, in the hundreds, and for hours. And I made myself scarce. My girlfriend at the time was there, but she let me do my thing or whatever, and I didn't like, again, I'm here, I am again hiding it from the people I was closest to. And that night before, I ended up on the floor of the hotel. I've never told anyone this. Next to the bed, my girlfriend at the time asleep in the bed, making sure I didn't want her to know. I was just laying on my side, rocking back and forth. I would say half the joke as rocking, and then the rock back would be to stop myself from throwing up, and then rock forward, say the other half of the joke, back forth, and I did it for fucking hours, just on my side. And I remember the room not being particularly cold. I was just shivering the entire time, just shivering, shaking, rocking back and forth about, and then it gets up, my eyes dried out, and my eyes hurt, and I was gagging on the dryness that I had no swallows left. I was swallowing, and in that moment, I was fucking 15 again, fucking scream crying. I couldn't make myself cry, but I was there. It and look, the set, there was some shenanigans. I got cut from TV. I got sent into about a year and a half of deep depression. And for a while, I said it was because of that to myself, but really that moment before, that was the moment that broke me. Laying on the floor, I was, because I just knew the illness would always own me. It was back again. And something, I don't think I surrendered, but something broke in me in that moment. And, you know, the next day, you know, I did the set. I did a bunch of miscarriage jokes, and I went dark. I made a choice. I made a conscious choice. You're like
supposed to.
Because here's the thing. You know, it's Comedy Central's thing. Good. Do your thing. You can cut me if you want. It's your decision, but I'm going to make fun of you for making a garbage-ass version of this thing. Like, they made it so soft, Disney World.
You're supposed to go as hard as you can.
And I wanted
to. They cut you from TV.
Yeah. It was, and I sent the jokes ahead of time, and they didn't say anything. And I did them, and they were dark, but that was my goal. It was probably naive of me. I wanted to show what it was in the underbelly, like the stand, like when it was gritty. I wanted to bring it, and I agree
that is what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, and
you're not supposed to make it go for Saturday morning cartoons. You're supposed to make it go for the roast.
Exactly. I made my choice. I went real dark. The miscarriage ones landed, I'll say that, and a couple didn't land as well. Like when I got there, I didn't realize kind of how soft it was going to be. When I got there and like the audience came in, it was all these like beautiful 22-year-olds. I was like, well, this is not going to go great. Like I was just like, when I saw the audience, I was like, oh shit.
But they landed.
They
landed.
Yeah, they landed, but then like a couple of them got more like that kind of thing. But again, I can deal with that. That's fine. But they ended up, cutting me from TV. And the only regret there is I feel bad for Pat, because Pat's versatile too. He can go dark. He made the right call. He did what you're supposed to do because he's so versatile and he can do anything. He just did great jokes that he adapted to that. And that's what everyone did, and I didn't.
I think you made the right decision.
I'm happy with my decision, without a doubt.
Especially when you find out no one's doing it, then you're like, sweet, I'll be the dark one.
But I don't want to give the impression that Pat can only do this, because he can do dark too. He just adapted himself to that moment. And he is great. And
Keep it lighter?
Did what?
Did they tell you to keep it on the light?
No, I think maybe I should have just known that, but
no,
I don't know.
No, why would you know to use a dark show and then to not do what it's asking you to do?
Yeah.
Remember Norm's fucking... Is it just me or is he for the birds?
Remember that? So good.
Yeah, it's like...
Oh, that moment. That was like, the greatest.
He's making fun of that sort of idea.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, no, you have to go for the jugular.
Yeah,
That's what they're asking you to do.
I got no regrets. And the way I looked at it was...
You shouldn't have any regrets.
The way I looked at it was, I could do some like fucking softer jokes, but it's not me. And then, okay, maybe more people will see it and digest it the way it's supposed to be digested, but... they're going to forget about it after that.
Exactly.
The way I saw it is, my fan, the type of person that will be a fan of me, would see that, and then I've got a fan for life. So it's less people that are going to connect with it, but those are people who are like, oh, let me Google this guy.
Adrian goes through the same thing, and she's like, not depressed, but like upset about like, well, it's like you keep doing these, she's very dark, you know?
Yeah.
And so you keep doing this dark stuff, and it doesn't allow you to gain this following. But I'm like, yeah, but if you go super light, you gain a following, you can't. That you don't want.
Exactly.
So all you need is to the point where you do get a following.
Yeah.
And then you're like Jim Jeffries and Jeselnik and whatever. Like those people are coming. You found your audience. And those people are coming for this.
Yeah.
To be offended.
Yeah.
So you're not going to walk them.
Exactly. Whereas if you build up a kind of more vanilla audience, then suddenly when you think of a great dark joke, it's harder to do it. They're going to be like, wait, what? You don't do that. This isn't your thing.
Yeah. Although in some parts of me goes, if you are in that, where you have your audience and you're doing like a 5,000 seater for all people who know, it's almost like lost its danger.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, you can't offend them. So what are you even doing here?
Yeah. That's a great point, actually. Well, yeah. So the TV, I don't want to, again, it's their thing. They cut, whatever, dude. Fine. Do your thing. I'll make fun of you for being, I'll make fun of Comedy Central for being stupid and trash. But I also, it's their thing and I chose to do those jokes, you know?
Yeah.
But, it was really, but again, it was the night before that broke me and it sent me into about a year and a half of just, I just stopped feeling anything. I was in just depression. I didn't care about anything. I withdrew from everyone. I checked out of
lack of feelings. That's what people don't understand. It's not that you feel bad. It's just like I just don't care.
I didn't care. I was a corpse. I was legitimately a corpse.
How'd you get out of it?
Well, I went there. I went back home. I was depressed. I was I stopped doing comedy. Every now and then I do a mic and I fulfilled
in Alabama.
No, I was in New York and home is in Brooklyn. Okay. Yeah. And I had some good moments. Me and Amico like got to go up and do Poughkeepsie, and that was, I think that was then, or maybe it was with Benny, I forget, but I had some good moments. But I stopped doing stand up mostly and I didn't care. They say you can't get addicted to weed. I got addicted as fuck to weed. That level of escapism is at least addictive, you know what I mean? Even if it's not physiologically like addictive.
Dr. Drew told me that once. I went on Loveline.
Oh yeah,
dream to go on there because I listened to it in college,
nice, dude.
In high school. Yeah.
Nice.
And I went out, Corolla was already gone, but like we were talking about weed addictive. I kind of rolled my eyes like, why? I'm like, come on. Well, because he says it's an addictive thing. And I'm like, dude, I don't get what you're saying. And he explained it to me. He goes, it's not, he goes, you and your buddy Rogan, like you can go and do work on it. So it didn't get in the way of your life. The sign of an addiction is when it gets in the way of your life. So if it's eating, you know, the cushions people eat, the stuff.
Yeah,
the
yeah, 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 yeah.
It's like, well, that's not an addictive for you or me.
Yeah.
But the people who.
Exactly.
So it's like, you must know people who smoke weed and just stay in their grandmother's basement all day.
Yeah.
That's not what they want their life to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an addiction.
Exactly. That's what I did. I didn't care. I went back to my job that fucking. I was a temp. They kept me on for 8 years as a temp just so they wouldn't have to give me benefits and health care. And so I didn't have any health care to deal with my mental illness. And. I felt nothing. I did weed, and all I wanted to do was with the weed, and I just wanted to play video games and smoke weed all day. And I was kind of just like leaning into the nothingness, and I was just a corpse. And I've never been like a suicide guy. That's never been my thing. Like where like, oh, I'm gonna go, but I was just kind of like, okay, I'm just whatever. I'm done. And I checked out. And
what did you think about doing it?
Killing myself? No, that's never been my thing. But
I get what you're saying.
But when I was like a teenager, when I was like 14, I remember praying for the courage to kill myself. I wished I was. I was like, this is agony. Why can't I be one of these?
That's why I always hate when people like it's a coward's way out. I'm like, no. You do not. Do you have any idea how much courage it takes to jump off that ledge?
Heroes.
I mean that.
I don't know if I should say. I don't know. I don't know what the correct thing to say
is
here.
A coward. You go up to like, I'm going to do some. I'm gonna
Stanhope has like very great bits about that. Like, oh, he took the coward's way out. He's a pussy.
I like his one joke about suicide. He was like, I see it like a movie. If you're 2/3 of the way in and it sucked the whole time, it's not gonna get really good right there. But imagine if you go up to go skydiving with your friends and they're like, jump, next guy jump, like you, Eli. It's like, I can't. Because you're a coward. Now apply that jump to a ledge off a building. It's the same shit.
And look, in this thing where I'm like, I'm trying to like, you know, take mental illness seriously. I don't know what the correct thing for me to be saying about this suicide stuff is. Like, I don't know if it's offensive to be saying like, I'm not a suicide guy, but like that, it's never been my thing. But I was just like emotional. Like, I can't say it without like sounding cheesy. Like, I felt like I fucking had no heart. Like, but I did. That's the best way I can describe it. I checked out of my relationship. I checked out of everything. I became withdrawn. I didn't care about anyone. I didn't care about myself.
Did your girlfriend? Could she tell? Is that when she started fucking Lewis? Or was it later?
One thing I was looking forward to, I was hoping that I would get a packet for the Baldwin roast. I really wanted that. I was like, okay, well, maybe fucking that'll be a light. And I remember asking around about it. I asked my manager, this was a few months later. I think it was a few months after it, or maybe a week. I forget exactly when. But I definitely was like, okay, maybe I have at least fucking that. And I asked my manager about it. Like, don't they have a packet? And Comedy Central specifically advised my manager to not give me even a packet. Like, they said, like, give it to the people. The other people specifically left me out. And they know I know how to write the thing they want to. So it's all pettiness. They've seen me write the way they want me to for roast. They know I have the ability, but they still, so I can't think of anything other than just being them like being bitches, you know? So that kind of sent me. I think because they thought I was being.
They thought you sabotaged it with the
drug
stuff?
Yeah, I think they were mad at me for that or some
shit. It's so crazy because what you do, I can tell you what happened. I've been in meetings with them. 10 people. I don't know how many it is, but let's say it's 10 people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And six of them are like, that guy's great. And two of them are like, yeah, whatever. I actually prefer this type, but whatever. And those people don't matter either. They have a preference. You know? It's okay if you like Gabriel instead of Stanhope.
Yeah.
Totally cool.
Yeah.
And then two people go like, well, I didn't like those jokes at all.
Mm-hmm.
And those are emotional arguments. And the six people, the two other people are like, well, I'm not fighting. I also didn't care for it. Mm-hmm. But I won't take your side. I won't be against you. And those other six people can only fight so hard. And if they fight too hard on you, they're not going to be able to fight the next guy. And you don't matter to them more than
exactly.
the other guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
like, all right, whatever.
It's a path of least resistance thing. Like. Yeah.
So then once they're like, all right, get rid of them. Then the standard is that guy's a problem. But you're only a problem for 20% of them. And then it just becomes like, oh, he's an issue. And then the thing that the title you have supersedes any of the facts around it. Same thing with nowadays. If you're like, that guy's toxic, and you're like, well, why is he toxic? Like, it doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't analyze the facts. It's just like the title is the truth. He's toxic. He's dangerous. He's problematic.
Yeah. Yeah,
things
yeah.
like that don't even mean anything. But they just they're on you now. Labels. You've got the labels probably. And so then it was like, but it fucking sucks. It fucking sucks that should happen.
Yeah. And I know the names of the two people. I'll tell you when the mics are off. But I know who it is. And I think my manager probably could be furious at me for saying this. But honestly, he ghosts me anyway. I don't even know if he's my manager anymore. So like there came a point where he stopped answering my football texts. That's what really hurt. Because and again, I wasn't living up to my part of the bargain either. I checked out. I was not working on things. So you can't just rely on someone to like get you shit, but like at least answer my fucking college football text. Jesus.
Is this one of them? I won't say. I swear I won't say. Is that one of them?
No.
Oh, okay. Good for her.
What was I saying? So that didn't help the depression. I definitely probably went deeper into it after that. And there came a point I would go on stage. Like I would try to do mics when I could. And like, the only thing I really felt every night, I would just lay like looking at the ceiling, and I'd have this anxiety of like knowing that I'd failed at comedy completely and I would never be a comic. Like I just like, oh, I just failed. And knowing it was still possible to do it, but that I wouldn't. And I was just like felt underwater. And every night I would just look at the ceiling for at least 3 hours and think about that and just be like, I failed. Okay, whatever. And be more and more depressed. And I would go to mics every now and then it came to a point where I would have panic attacks. And
before you went on stage?
Started on stage, and it got to the point, I remember I'd go on stage, and...
I mean, at least you're at a mic where it blends in with the other crazies.
But also, it's like, you know, you're in front of, like, 40 people who you know, and it's scary. They're not strangers, you know? It's scary, and I would go on stage and instantly feel like I was about to pass out. The room would start spinning. I would, like picture whatever a split second feels like before you actually pass out. Sustained for however many minutes I was on stage, room spinning, I would stop, I couldn't breathe, shortness of breath, I'd have to like try to fucking get that under control.
Yeah.
And both my arms would go completely numb. I couldn't feel the microphone in my hand.
No.
And then, but then on top of the numbness, there were, and then my legs would get numb too, and there would be a sharp tingles, like it felt like acupuncture, just sharp needles in it. And I didn't know what the fuck this was, and I had to like tell my jokes and put on a straight face and like, I think once I even tried to say it and everyone laughed and I was like, okay, sure, what's the joke then? Okay. But like, and then after that happened the first time, I was just like, well, I don't ever want to do that again. So I was like, do I just have to never, is this it? Is this officially, am I officially done with stand up forever? Cause I don't ever want to have to go through that again. And I was like, no, I'll never, if I stay home the next night, I'm just never going to go out and do stand up again. So I made myself go out, and it got to the point where once I got to the venue, it would start. So then I'm trying to talk to like my friends and shit, and like I just want to tell them I'm like smiling and like holding something because I'm like the room is spinning and I'm about to collapse any second and I can't breathe. And then I'd fucking go on stage with the room all wobbling and shit and get on stage and do my shit. And I'd say it was like I told Becky about some of this at the time, but. And I told my girlfriend at the time about that, but I think I still hid the extent of it. I'm just always hiding. I don't know how to tell the people in my life this shit. I don't know how to communicate it. And yeah. I'm scared to. I'm scared of looking weak. And just because I think that the kids call it toxic masculinity or whatever, just that upbringing of like, suck it up. And I'd say I went about like 15 times in a row that happened. Until finally, we kind of hit on this earlier, finally I was able to kind of be like, okay, well, I didn't pass out last night. So maybe I'm okay. And it slowly, I'd say it was about 2 months, It was 15 like sets, I'd say, was like that peak, like Jesus Christ, this is hell. And then it slowly got better and better and slowly. And after 2 or 3 months, like I had more control over it. But I also, my anxiety was just through the roof then. My depression was through the roof. I was always scared of death, like nothingness. Like if there's no God, fortunately there is the Lord Jesus. But like if there is no God, then like the idea of nothingness has always been a concept that hammers my brain. And that came back. That's another thing that came back from when I was like 15. And I freaked out about it. I remember this was a typical me thing. My parents came to visit and we went to Coney Island in the aquarium, and like I ran ahead of them outside of the aquarium and had, I guess, a nervous breakdown. I don't even know what you call that, but I don't know what the technical definition for a nervous breakdown is. I was just on all fours on the pavement screaming, and
unless you're on Coney Island.
Yeah. And I don't even know what it was, man. I have no idea what that was coming from. And my parents, and it was just like me. I hopped up, like my parents came out of the building, like, hey, and I'm like, hey guys, what's up? Like everything's okay. Like just
that, bearing the last of
that,
it.
That conditioned. I'm just conditioned to hide it so fucking well. And I checked out of everything. And COVID happened. I had a breakup, and I don't want to get on that too much.
Was that recent?
That was, you know, a few months ago, and again, I want to stay off that. Everything, you know, this was a significant part of it, but there's obviously more to the story than that. And she urged me to go to therapy, and I didn't until it was too late. And she's great and awesome, and we're on good terms as far as I know. So I'm gonna stay off that. But it did help, kind of like I felt things again after that.
After the breakup.
Yeah. I think it took something that harsh to, I think it took something I cared about that much to, I didn't realize, like, cause you think you don't care about everything, but then you realize, fuck, I care. And then like,
it's one of those positives and negativity.
And
right?
Again, brought on by like Justified. The breakup was 100% Justified. Like the TV show Justified is about my breakup. That's how Justified it was. But like, it did. I cried for the first time in like a decade. And
so you're like, oh, I can feel.
It was the most amazing feeling of my life to cry. And, yeah, I started feeling
like, oh, look at that.
Yeah. Look, I didn't do it in front of her. I'm not a bitch, but but yeah, after that, I started going to therapy finally. And I did once in the interim, I did go once, but like it was out of pocket and I couldn't afford, I liked it, but I couldn't afford to keep going, you know?
And now you can?
Becky actually hooked me up. She has connects, and I got a series of good ones. And then now I'm trying to do like the cheaper like phone. There's like, if you find like kind of student therapists,
that's called something. That's,
I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a name for it.
Not
and Kaplan. And it's more, I'm doing great now, honestly. Like ever since then, COVID's been kind of easy for me. Like I'm on the up and up. I started feeling things again. I felt a new appreciation for life. I became all fucking, I think that, the empathy came out, and I became more, even more kind of soft, like lefty type empathy. Like I got more involved in all that stuff, and like some of the, like I've been like, I don't know, I kind of hesitant to say, cause it sounds like self-righteous, you don't want to like brag, but like doing like mutual aid stuff and things that are helping people.
Mutual aid?
Yeah, like people like distributing food distributions. Oh, okay. And things like that. And I think that there's the hardness kind of busted, and once that floodgate was down, like the empathy came out, and I just felt more free kind of emotionally, I guess, to put in real gay terms. And and I've been doing great. I started working again. I started writing again. I'm less caring. I'm doing my podcast. I did a podcast during all that, but like I kind of stopped doing it now. And the last one I did was like a month ago, and I need
Roast
to, I'm going to keep doing it, but like I'm focused more on like the helping out people. Like I think that like right now I'm just less focused on comedy and shit like that, but
there's not much going on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so doing the park shows and they're fun, but
I will tell you, like there's a few Christians I know. One teacher I had, like an acting class teacher who was like a good Christian, which I call him, where it's like they're not trying to act like they're better than you.
Mm-hmm.
They just are Christian. And another one is Steve Simone. I don't know if you know him. He's a
comedian. No.
Christian. But like he won't say like, I'm doing this because I'm Christian. He'll just do stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's like he's not even interested in giving an example to other people.
Yeah.
But it ends up happening. Like, you're just walking along and somebody's like, can I get a dollar? I was like, no, man, but are you okay? And you're walking along, like, and you're like, oh, yeah, I could be nicer.
Yeah, I think, you know? And I've spent my
whole
life.
He's not like rubbing in your face, like, look how nice I am.
Yeah, I grew up real conservative. I've spent my whole life kind of fighting off that. Like, but I think that, like, once you cross that line where, like, oh no, everything fucking matters. God damn it. There's no going back, so I don't recommend it to everyone. Stay callous.
You know, starfish, right? Starfish?
No.
It's a Christian thing.
Chocolate starfish?
No.
Hot dog flavored
two men
water.
Are walking on the beach, and 1,000 starfish are washed up. They're all going to die. because they're out of the water.
Oh no.
And it's not a real story. It's a okay, good, good, it's good. A fucking
got real
religious
sad.
Thing. It's
so it's a real. What do you mean it's not a real story?
Well, it's like the
are two, you telling me these parables weren't
the,
real?
It's the footprints on the sand that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
But so he's like, damn, they're all gonna die. They're like, fuck, that's a lot of dead starfish. And then one of the guys reaches down and grabs one of the starfish and like throws it back in the water. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to make a difference. Like, you can't possibly make a difference. There's 1,000 starfish in here.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, it makes a difference to that starfish.
Exactly. Yeah. You do what you can, man. You help what you can. And I agree with like with the guy you're talking about. You shouldn't make a show of it. I guess technically like there's like a lead by example thing, but yeah, you don't want it to become like a thing where it's like, this is my identity as a good person. Like right. That's not good. No. You know?
To show to other people like I'm doing it right.
That's, yeah, the, that's rumor, the thing that with, like yeah solidarity not charity. I think that's the phrase, you know.
Same like, thing with like, well, there's all these gestures makers. The left wing is full of like gesture makers.
What do you mean?
You get like Kamala Harris and a couple of the black people wearing like dashikis on the floor of Congress to show that Black Lives Matter.
But they yeah, Jesus
done
Christ.
Anything. They're just like, look at me put on this, not even African-American garb, straight African garb.
How about you give fucking health care to every African-American in this country? There how you about go. That? You, yeah. How about you fucking stop putting our money toward killing people overseas?
Or people have Black Lives Matter things on their, you know, suburban,
it's not
like,
enough.
Suburb.
It's like, yeah, like, people
have you
use
done
it
anything?
As a,
or you just like, look at me.
It's like, and it's when like, these companies do it, on the one hand, I guess like, okay, I kind of like that you felt the pressure to do that. But at the other hand, it can be a symbol where it's like a symbol. Like sometimes symbols kind of do matter, but it also can be an excuse to not do something substantive.
Well, like
you know
Budweiser's
what I mean?
Like rainbow cans.
Yeah, it's like,
we're like
yeah,
is
yeah.
Is this money
exactly.
going to gay
yeah, yeah.
stuff? Like, nah.
Which is like, it's fine. And the people who get real mad about that kind of crap, like the people who are mad at sports for being too woke, like, okay, you're being your own kind of weird sensitive. You're yeah. being a bitch too. Like, and that's yeah. kind of funny to me. But at the same time, like, yeah, that stuff is all, it's all symbolic and yeah. you want to make sure you're doing something substantial.
But if charity makes you feel good, the same way golf makes Nate feel good.
Yeah.
He's not trying to be like, I golf, you don't.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a
it's
good
just
point.
Like, you just
yeah,
do
yeah.
it like, ah, I really love
this. I, it's just, I think it's something everyone should do. I think you should just help out your fellow people. Like, I guess. I don't know.
It is fun. Being a big brother or some shit.
yeah, dude.
Whatever.
Do some shit like that.
Yeah, I would just be a bad big brother.
But yeah, no, I'm better than, like, the therapy now is almost more, because I'm doing really good right now.
Are you going to Alan or are you going to someone else?
I actually went to Alan the one time. Yeah. But now it's, no, it was different with other things. And now it's more preventative than anything. Cause I really am actually, for once, not hiding anything. I'm doing fucking good. But it's preventative. I don't ever want to get back in that place again. Cause I don't know how to tell this. I don't know how to talk to the people in my life about this kinds of things. So I feel like, you know, leading up to those roast battles and before I had that fucking shit, like maybe if I was talking to someone regularly about it, I could have like prevented it and seen what was happening. And so now the therapy is more, I just want to keep doing it so that it just doesn't happen again, I guess.
That was one of my questions. Can you fix it?
I don't think you can. No, I think you can make it, you learn to deal with it. Like, you know, when if someone like someone who's missing an arm, you don't tell them their arm will grow back. You tell them like you can still have a great life. Like, you know, like you will find a way. I don't know. Maybe, dude, I don't look at like, I don't, maybe some scientific breakthroughs have happened where like, oh, actually you can get rid of the, I don't know. I think in that moment, like that was just, I never thought I'd get back to that dark of a place again. And I just never want to be there again. You know what I mean? It just fucking, I don't know. It just fucking.
Is it something where if you see it starting, you can, have a lifeline, like you know who to call?
No, not call it, but like I think just having regular, it hasn't come up yet. Like again, I'm back to where I was between 25 and 32, where like it's still there. Like I said, every time I've swallowed while we've talked, the devil has come in every single time. Every single time when I poured water, it was happening. But I'm just now, I'm back to where I can just be like, fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you weren't raised religious, do you think when you swallow, you would just have replaced the devil with a jinx or something? Like some, you know, like my mom will die in a car accident, but not because of the devil, just because like,
yeah,
step on a crack, break your mother's back.
Yeah,
you know, that
probably
kind of
sometimes it was because of the devil. Sometimes it was, yeah, just regular, they'll die of a car crash. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, would you have still been the same way?
I
just
think so.
Taking the devil out of it.
No, it was. Because some. No, there were plenty of times it wasn't the devil when it was just the car crash growing up. The devil was the main, that the religious thing just kind of was the main umbrella that encompassed me at that time.
Yeah. Damn, interesting. Real interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember going to therapy for like, I don't know, something. And then my friend told me, like, I was like, nah, I have thoughts of suicide, but I'm not doing it. And she goes, oh, bring that up in therapy. She goes, nah, I don't think you'd be interested. She goes, I'm almost guaranteed that your therapist will be interested.
Yeah.
In that. And then everything else. Well, the therapist,
they
never,
they always tell me, like, yeah, you need meds. Like, I almost feel like
Did
I'm
you
like,
take, are you taking any?
No, I don't have the money for it, or I don't have, I don't have healthcare. I lost, I had a minimum
this
wage.
Fucking country.
Yeah, dude. I had a, that's the other thing that happened. Like, during my year of depression, I got fired. I got the boot from my job that wasn't already giving me healthcare. Like, it was like some bullshit. Like, I was in next in line to get the actually get hired full time. Like the progressive, like my boy had gotten that job before and then he was leaving. So I was like the natural person. I had the experience and my higher up boss was in Chicago, always nice to us. And she was just looking out for her boy, I guess, but still, Jesus, her like assistant who had been there for like 2 years. I had been there for 8 years. Her assistant for 2 years in Chicago. She made him the head of the New York thing that I was doing. So he got all the healthcare. He got all that and I got fucking fired. And then I ended up getting a minimum wage mailroom job, and they liked me, and you know, I worked whatever, and I was on the verge of getting hired full time, and it was going to be low. It was still going to be minimum wage. It was still going to be real low, but I was going to get benefits. And then like they're like, okay, next week we're going to have you sign all the shit, and then the lockdown happened, and they haven't contacted me since.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are like, we're trying to survive.
Yeah, it's whatever, dude. That's not on them. That's just the fucking the pandemic happened. We're in the middle of a pandy.
I just wish we could figure out this. I'm not saying Obamacare or not or whatever. I'm just like, I wish we could figure out the people who need fucking mental health coverage could just get mental health coverage.
I think everyone should get health care, mental and otherwise. And they have the money. Let me tell you, they have the fucking money.
I don't know
what
to do. I just want it done.
Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know, man. It's a despairing situation.
It really is, especially when other countries you can like get it done.
Yeah, I've heard that even like in Europe, like even the like right wing fascists who are trying to, they won't even touch universal healthcare because they know that like, no, of course everyone has to have that. Like everyone will turn on us. But here it's just like, nope, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We can't just, who will pay for it? I'm already paying for you to fucking murder people. You know?
Yeah, like, but then I was like, who's going to pay for it? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know who pays for the DMV.
You, bitch. You have a lot of money. Yeah. Like,
yeah, you. Take off your suit and give me healthcare.
You fuck. Get over this lie that you earned everything you have, you privileged piece of shit.
So many people going like, well, poor people just work harder.
Get the fuck out of here. Oh, I hate it. I hate it.
What do your friends in comedy say about all this? You know, like what? When they see you going through it and stuff,
this is the first time I've said all this, really. I've like, you know, I've thrown hints and shit like that. I've like said stuff like, you know, I've just said like I won't battle again because, and if anyone asks, I usually just say like I'm over it. But other times I might say like, put me in a bad place. But I've never gone into detail about it until now. I've never said all this stuff. Some of this stuff is the first time I've said it.
If people ask you why I won't battle again, just say your dad got murdered on the side of the road in North Carolina from possible gambling debts of yours. And so you've retired from the world of battling.
Oh, fuck the number 23, though. Baseball. I can't be the number 23. That's the divisible by the devil's number. Three? I got to be.
Two times three is also six.
Oh, God damn it. Fuck. So, yeah, I can't be. I'm not. It's also presumptive to be like, I'm Jordan. I'm not going to say that shit. But. That's so funny, though, his dad. You think he got his dad killed?
I don't... If I'm remembering the story correctly, there was no money missing from the dad. He was just killed on the side of the road.
Good Lord.
So...
It could just be fate. It could just be a bad...
Absolutely
bad
could be.
Bad coincidence, you know?
But... Could also be a guy who gambled a lot and said, I'll pay you later. And they're like, we need you to pay us now. Like, he's like, fuck those guys. I'll pay you later.
Yeah, yeah. Jordan, like, I understand him feeling like, I don't have to pay you anything. What are you talking about? Yeah, like,
I'm the best in the world and you're not.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't be?
I don't know. Definitely he didn't plan to get his dad killed. But,
yeah, no. You didn't want it.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do they ever solve it? Who killed him?
I don't think so. Not that I know of. I don't know.
I bet he paid after that, though.
Yeah, probably.
Damn.
It's so fucking sad.
Can you break down, this is the last question I had, break down the words obsessive compulsive.
The obsessive part is, I think that what I was fixating on that would happen if I didn't do the compulsion. The obsessive part is my parents will die in a car wreck. And that's,
you obsess on that.
Yeah, that's my brain shows it to, presents it as this will happen. And you picture all the ugly details and it's devastating. And the compulsive part is the ritual you have to do to clear that, to get rid of that.
That's a compulsion.
That's a compulsive part, yeah.
Obsessive, I can understand, like when you have a breakup and you're like, I gotta stop thinking about this.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it just creeps back in your head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, that's obsessing on something. Where you're like, I don't wanna think about it, and you are.
Everyone obsesses to an extent, but I mean, with the OCD, I have it worse. Like, cause some people have more the obsessive part and more the compulsive part. I had a nice, healthy quote unquote mix of both obsessive and compulsive, but it also made it so even things where I didn't have to do a ritual, like the obsessions were just a nightmare, just like constant. Like if I obsessed on anything, it's very hard to get it out. Unwanted thoughts. Like, I think they have those unwanted thoughts syndrome. I think like that comes in. I got a lot of shit that I haven't got it diagnosed because I haven't like been to therapists. I've not been like, when I try to ask them that, they're like, okay, you need to go to a psychiatrist for that. Cause they're all kind of like, when I say it, they're all like, one, they're stunned that this is my first time getting help. They're like, what? Like, they're like, what are you kidding me? Yeah. And then two, they're like, it almost feels like I'm out of their depth. They're like, yeah, you need meds. And I'm like, I can't give no meds.
Damn.
Yeah.
Fuck. Maybe that's why you have gray hair in your fucking 30s.
Yeah, that might be it. Right.
Worrying about everything all the time.
Been through some shit.
Damn. How much are meds? You have to get insurance to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost any med is like, wait, what?
Yeah, you ever, probably you ever like a go just to get an
antibiotic or something, and then you go to like fill it, and they go like, yeah, it's $700. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And they go, Oh, I'm sorry, your insurance is not in here. It's $6. And you're like, wait, that was the difference in price? Like, who can afford this without insurance? It's a crazy... One time I was getting travel meds for somewhere, and I had to get 3 shots of something.
Because you've suffered depression as well, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, you went through...
they paid for the meds.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was like $50 a month, I think.
And what did it do for you? Did it really, like, alleviate? Did it cut that out?
Yeah, it evened me out. So it took... You have to, so there's no like, it's not an exact science. So people ask me, what med did I take? It's like, it's what worked for me. I tried Wellbutrin, didn't work. And so then you have also like, there's 2 factors. Does it work and are the side effects worth it? You know? So like, one of them I took wasn't working yet, but also I noticed that the girlfriend at the time I had, I was like, I could just fuck and I just couldn't come. And I was like, I didn't come. I don't know. Just fucked for like 30 minutes and just didn't care.
Yeah,
like,
whatever.
And then it happened again. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And then she read the back of my thing, and she's like, oh, yeah, it's a side effect. I'm like, oh, weird. That it lowers your sex drive and shit like that. Some of them, one of them gave me hyperphagia, which is the inability to feel full.
Wait, like food-wise?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The doctor said you can expect to gain 15% of your body weight. 15%. So if you're 200
because
pounds,
you're
gain
eating
30.
More than you usually would to try to fill it.
You'll never feel full. I would have to tell myself, like, hey, dude, 6 plates of spaghetti is enough, right? You can mentally understand that, even though if you don't feel it. 2 plates is probably enough.
Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, you're right. I mean, I would eat everything in the house. Epic. When I got high and had that.
Oh, God, and you get high. Did it get in high? Did it, like, well, I guess with me, it temporarily helped in long-term hurt. Did it help you?
Okay, so this is what my doctor. So I had a lot of therapists or doctors, psychologists, I don't know the terms. Who were not very good. Insurance covered them. And I eventually just like, I'm done. I give up. It's okay. I'll get the courage at some point, but I'm done fighting. I had one of those doctors, therapists, whatever. I was like, this isn't working. She goes, well, I don't know what else to tell you. And I was like, all right, fair enough. I don't want to bother you. She's terrible.
Fuck that, SAG dude. Insurance Fuck doctor. That.
Yeah. And then Rogan was like, my business manager had this. I'll pay whatever. And it was $180 per half hour. I'm like, dude, there's no way. He goes, I'll pay for it.
That's don't so nice of him.
Yeah, yeah. Save my life. But like, and that guy was like just a really smart dude. Anybody good therapy wise doesn't take insurance. The meds are covered, but the therapists themselves like, no way. Cause then I'm only getting paid $50 an hour when I can make $200 an hour. This guy would be $360 an hour. So I didn't want to face this about weed, but we were talking and different times after a few sessions, like, all right. So just to be honest, like I smoke a lot of pot. I don't want this to be the problem, but I know it might be. And he goes, it's not an issue. He goes, alcohol is a temporary relief from depression. Long term makes it worse. This is what all the studies are. It's just guys are just really smart. And he goes, marijuana is a temporary relief. Long term, no effect whatsoever. Doesn't make you worse or better.
Wow.
That's what really? The studies that he showed me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess it would vary a little bit person to person.
Vary a little bit. And also like, overall maybe. But also... now, I don't know what the effects are of sitting in your apartment all day long. You know, it's not the weed. It's what the weed causes. Like, have you ever taken mushrooms?
Yeah.
You get worn out the next day. It's not the mushrooms. It's the mushrooms have made you take a fucking 8-hour walk.
That is what you do feel tired after you
But like you've been doing mentally.
Because you're looking at nature and shit. Yeah, you're like fucking trees take on a whole new meaning.
Moving and moving and moving. Yeah, and mentally you're like doing it. It's not the It's just like what the mushrooms make you do makes you tired. So anyway, that's what he told me. But I had to take a bunch of different pills until I found the right pill and then the right dosage. And then that hyperphagia one didn't work. And then the only side effect was low blood pressure. So I would stand up sometimes. And then I'd be like, oh, fuck. And I have to like go like this for a second.
Oh, that sucks. I hate that.
Minor. Don't think. And then like, okay, I'm okay. Totally could live with that. And then it just doled me out. That's all. I just didn't feel the lows. And then after a few years of that, I was like, I haven't been in love in a while. This might be related to this.
Yeah, you got to have love.
So eventually I was like, let me get off it. And the doctor was like, you're probably healed by now. Because it's supposed to be just put like a cast on your brain muscle until it's healed. So
that's fascinating.
It's a weird thing, but you know, if I didn't have a fucking, whatever the word is, someone who pays for you. What's that word? Who pays for you to live?
Wait, what? When someone pays for you to work?
Benefactor? If I didn't have a benefactor
Then you would have been fucked.
I'd been fucked.
Yeah, you'd be like me, just a piece of shit.
No. Yeah, it's a problem here that you can't get fucking clear help or something. You need help.
No, I want to, and I need, I say it like, I'm glad. How did you know I had OCD germaphobe? Did Becky tell you? Because you asked me to
Big J.
Did Big J tell you? Okay, because you messaged me, and I was like, I didn't know that I'd talk to you about that, but I guess someone else told you.
Yeah, we were talking about something, and Big J was like, yeah, he's got germaphobia. He goes, actually, this would be a good thing for your podcast because it's all like topic based.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you're right. It would be a good.
And then
you're like, well, it's not germaphobia. It's OCD.
There's a little of that, but it's like, yeah, the pandy's been easy for me, dude, because I've been training for this shit my whole life. To me, it's like, because now that the like, I kind of broke out of my depression, anxiety, whatever thing, like, just, yeah, I can, I if I go out, I have to take a shower and get back in. I wash my, but I've been doing that for forever.
But great. This is only going to serve you for
easy
this.
As
where
shit.
You're supposed
yeah.
to do all that shit.
Yeah, it's real easy.
Come
as
in
shit
and wash
me.
Your hands.
Exactly. I'm perfect with that. Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
still burn yourself? Are they here? Okay. Yeah, we're about done anyway.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it seems like it.
I gotta sell this shit.
Well, I never intentionally burned myself, but
yeah, I know. But I mean, you don't have to.
OCD thing. Well, like I said, it's still there, but I've gotten back to where I'm just tougher than it now. All right, I'm just like fuck you. Like,
what's your doctor told you that's helped you?
Wait, what?
What is your therapist?
Oh, the therapist didn't do that. I just did that.
What is? How has he helped you?
It's just good to talk to someone about all this shit, I think. And like I said, it's preemptive. Like, if I were to slip back into that, I don't want to be fucking next to a hotel bed, rocking back and forth, hiding it from my girlfriend at the time, sleeping. And my head was in such a weird spot. Like, if I heard someone coming, they had no keys to the hotel, I'd hop back in the bed real quick because I thought they would walk in and see me. That's just where my brain was just like gone. And I just don't ever...
It's embarrassing, yeah.
I never want to get back to that. And so it's literally just, I want to... make sure it never happens again. And that if I'm regularly talking to someone about it, because like I said, I don't know how to tell this to my friends. I don't know how to say this outside of like, this is a comedic performance. This is a performance
too. So it's like, ugh,
yeah. And also, so many people have it worse than me. That's the main thing. It's like, oh, boo fucking who. Look what other people are going through right now. Yeah. You know? And it's just like, you know, boo hoo, my little fucking
mental
shit.
There's a way to not wallow in it. We
yeah.
can still like, can I get some assistance here?
That's a great point. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
where it's
definitely.
Like, if I have a coffee cup and I'm trying to put a backpack on, it's not like, oh, my problem is so great. It's just like, hey, Eli, hold this for a second. You know, thanks.
Yeah.
You know, you can get help without being the center
of people
attention.
Have been cool. I have, like, since I've started talking about it on stage a little bit, I've, people are more careful to fist bump me instead of handshake me, and I really appreciate that. That's really nice of people. Like, I've noticed, I've seen people go for a handshake and then been like, oh, my bad, and done that when I didn't even tell them. I would never tell someone, you have to fist bump me, but they just,
they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're just cool about it, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, or if somebody has a nub, you're like, start fist bump. start elbows. Hell, those people with nubs must love the new elbow because
oh my god,
that look of like when you go in there with like a fish hand.
Oh
know,
yeah,
like
that
people like this, like no more look, just elbow, totally fine now. Yeah, man, it's like, yeah, there's a way to deal. I think when we talked about on 14th, I remember that was like there's a way to apply these roast jokes to any topic. I really think you can apply that
exactly.
same technique to this
I think
shit,
so, and I've been trying
to personal stuff.
I think so. I need to try to. I want to roast the illness. I want to.
Yeah.
It's like when you're shitting on the government. They're a comic that is a political. They're roasting the president. They're roasting the government.
Yeah.
And I want to find a way. Yeah. There's a way. There's got to be a way.
Maybe start with. It's going to be a learning curve for sure. But maybe start with roasting someone else's fucking disease.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And then use that gets you. But there's gonna be a thing where it's like it's gonna make your stand up worse and then far
better.
That's
the thing. It's like it sucks when you. I have my way that I know. Again, not to sound arrogant, but like after doing it for so long, you know you can go up and crush in certain situations, and you have to be willing to go up there and flounder.
You got to go attack your weaknesses,
and that sucks. But you have to do it, right? You have to. It's like training. You know, you focus on what you're weakest at. Yeah, and then do it.
Rogan was trying to get his black belt and in jiu-jitsu, and he's one of the best guys in the class, and Eddie Bravo, his instructor, was like, dude, I can't. You haven't worked off your back enough. And he goes, well, I'm strong. I push people over. He goes, I know. Until you get someone who's stronger than you and you can't push them down.
That's
fucked.
Great.
Because you have no experience working off your back. So from then on, you just start pulling people on top of them and then going that way.
I actually had that mindset for a while when I was doing stand-up because I used to obsess and just do tons of like open mics everywhere I could. I was like, I would look at it in terms of like your comedy black belt and like the kung fu movies where someone travels and learns all the different styles around the world. It's like, I got to go to a hood room. I would do every type of room because I didn't want there to be any situation that I didn't know how to handle.
Yeah.
And I had that for a while. Like I did feel comfortable going in anywhere. And that was part of the OCD, just the obsessive of like, I have to get on stage every night. And,
yeah. You're a great joke writer. I think you can honestly like apply this to that and like do something really special. It's just going to take some work, but I think you can get to a place.
Thanks, man. I'm going to try, man. I'm going to try.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on, dude. I'm terrified to talk about this stuff. So I maybe never would have said all this if you hadn't asked me to come on. So it worked out really well.
Yeah. Well, you got $100 for it. Congrats.
You for real?
I'm for real.
Jesus fucking Christ. This is the greatest thing that's happened to anyone.
Whatever sponsor of this week is. I don't know who it's going to be. I'm banking some of these, but guys,
Big Pharma. Thanks to Big Pharma.
Big Pharma. Yeah, it might be. It might be a CBD company. Check out the Roast Ghosts. His podcast where he does not talk about any of this shit. It's about doing serious stuff. Like, not some jokes or later.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking sit in that every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Or check him out on Instagram or Twitter at Eli Sayers, Sairs, Eli Sayers. And,
I'm annoying on Twitter. I'm annoying lefty on Twitter as a heads up. Less so on Instagram. I'm an annoying lefty on Twitter. Just brief. Yeah. Just I try to give people a heads up on that.
All right. Well, don't follow him on Twitter. Actually, get off Twitter. Okay, there.
All right. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. All right, that is the episode, everybody. Oh, I'm still laughing about this title. Did you like Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank episode number 407? Obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, obsessive, compulsive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, 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 compulsive, 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 obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, 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 obsessive, 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 compulsive, 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 obsessive, 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 compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, compulsive, obsessive, compulsive, obsessive. Obsessive compulsive with Eli Sayers. Did you enjoy it? So, also people are like, you need to take mental health more seriously. No, I don't. First of all, we're all fucking crazy. And I don't mean everybody in the world's crazy. I mean, all of us who suffer from some sort of mental fucking problems, we're all fucking crazy. So why can't I call the other ones crazy? I can call myself crazy, but I can't call them crazy. We're crazy, you guys. We got some of the crazy gene. Something's fucked up in there. It's a brain sprain or fucking, like I told you, fucking fish arm brain. And Eli got it bad. Bad. So here's what he wanted me to tell you. Because, like, it was tough for him. Reach out to him, you guys. He's on fucking Instagram or Twitter, right? Eli Sayers. Where is this? Eli Sayers Twitter. The music is fucking tough to narrow down on this one. Oh, on my podcast, I now have tiers on my Patreon with stickers, t-shirts, and mugs coming soon. Whoa. Eli Sayers Twitter. I hope he's not on there. Everybody get off Twitter. Well, it's Eli Sayers, New York-based comedian. Eli Sayers. Go on there, let him know that you enjoyed the episode, because how could you not enjoy this fucking episode? How could you not? Instagram. Also, Eli Sayers. Elisayers. A fucking good one for once, you fucking dumb comics. Robert Kelly comedy? What the fuck?
Was Robert Kelly taken? No. What the fuck? Let him know that you enjoyed the episode. Oh, where do you want me to tell you? Oh, so this is what he said. Here's the extra stuff. This will make way more sense now. So I asked him, hey man, the podcast coming out Monday or Wednesday. I'm doing the intro tonight. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, by the way. Have a great Thanksgiving. Is there anything you want me to promote or anything extra you wish you would have told me that I can tell people? So I told you we want to promote the Roast Ghost podcast on YouTube. Those are his fucking Eli Sayers on Twitter and Instagram. On YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Google Pods, and whatever. And I have a college football segment on the Walk on the Props Network, iTunes, YouTube. For other stuff, I think I mentioned that my eyes would dry out and hurt, but I think I forgot to mention that one of my rituals was I often couldn't blink while I was doing all this stuff. So that explains it a bit better. Couldn't blink, wasn't allowed to blink. If you think that may help make things more clear, I currently have, he also could have put that sentence, he put the slash in there, he's right. I have and had so many OCD rituals, like every 30 seconds, that I can never remember them all in one sitting. There's a ton more, to be honest. Thanks again. And I said, it's great talk, man. I am sure people will love it. You did, right? That was a fucking good one. That was a good one. That's a fucking... When I got done with that, I was like, damn, he went through shit. Can you imagine going to Montreal, maybe being on TV on this fucking big thing that you're key on, that you're a fucking roast battle guy. And then being up all night fucking shivering like that and throwing... You know, I've got nerves. I threw up and had to swallow once at the DC Improv right before I went on. I think I was doing a guest set for Mitch Hedberg. I think that's when it was. And I was like, they were like, oh, this next comic. And I was like, I mean, it wasn't just like a little bit of bile. I mean, it was a full barf. And I had to decide, you know, or swallow. Just let it go behind the stage there or just swallow it. I just swallowed it and then went on with like stink breath. Can you imagine getting that nervous? And he got way more nervous. And then he had to deal with this shit. That's nuts, dude. Eli, that was fucking nuts. I cannot imagine. I can imagine. When people say I can't imagine, it's like, you can't? Do you have no imagination? I can't imagine what it was like in the Holocaust. Can you not? You know, bad food, cold, three to a bunk. You've seen pictures. What's wrong with your imagination? I can imagine fucking living on Mars. I can imagine there was an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where the empath lady, she was half, her mom's side was, I don't know that's which side is which, fucking nerds, relax. Her mom's side was full, I can read your mind, and her dad's side was normal. So she could just read people's emotions. She was hot. Did I beat off to her? Yes! Go to manscaped.com right now. Thank you for our sponsors too, by the way. Our sponsors. Discord, Skeptic Tank. Here we go. Manscaped.com. Use promo code Skeptic. It's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. 20% off your order and free shipping. I've told them not to do 20. Does everybody do 20%? What I keep telling you, 15 is enough. And then DHM Detox. You have to go to... It's a CO domain. It's nodayswasted.co/skeptic30. This week only, 30% off. I would use them. I don't know. It depends. If you don't shave your balls, you don't shave your balls. But if you do, fucking go to Manscaped. But I'm telling you, I know a lot of my fucking fans are alcoholics. So you drink hard, you fucking go for it, you mix. Shouldn't do that, but everybody does. It fucking worked for me. That's all I'm saying. That DHM detox shit from nodayswasted.co, it fucking worked for me. I was great the next day, and I should not have been. What was I saying? Well, I got sidetracked. This is what I mean. I got sidetracked by fucking ads. It takes away from what I'm actually fucking doing. I appreciate them for fucking sponsoring me. It's not that I don't. But you know what I mean. I shouldn't be doing any ads. Support them because they supported me. But like, go to patreon.com/AriShaffir. And 3,000. If I get 3,000 people on there, then fucking no more ad reads. What was I going to say? What was I going to say about Eli? Fuck. It's gone. It's completely gone. I know. You guys remember because you're not fucking potheads. Dude, the weed out here is surprising. I mean, it was psychedelic at some points. I was getting fucking waves. I wish I could tell you where I am. I'll tell you in a few weeks. But I'm having fun. I'm having fun. I'm running around. I'm doing fun shit. I'm trying to learn a little bit of the language. It's hard. Plus, with the mass, you can't understand English speakers. Let alone fucking, you know, another language. You want to read their lips. But we'll see. Little by little. I'm getting it. I'll get better. I got to study more. I got to do more Duolingo and shit. You know, I often say that the best way to feeling good is telling yourself you need to, you deserve to. I mean, a lot of it really is. I'll back up on that statement a little bit. A lot of it is a lot of comics are fucked up mentally. And so they're like, hey, this one worked for me a little bit. But they couch it in a way that makes them, they want to make themselves seem like experts. Jonah Ray was the best one. Jonah Ray just like, enjoy your burrito. He was just like, I don't know, man, when I was at my worst. I'm sure I've told you this, but I'll tell you it again. He was at, when I was at my worst, he goes, the only thing that would make me happy was some burrito from fucking some place near his house in Silver Lake. And while he was eating his burrito, once a day, he got fat. He was like, well, I'm almost done with my burrito and then I'll be back to full depression. And he said he realized that it was the one thing that brought him happiness. He wasn't even enjoying it because he was thinking, I'm going to be sad again soon. And he goes, no matter what's happening, I should have at least enjoyed that fucking burrito. I can get back to the sadness. And that was his mantra after that. Enjoy your burrito. The little things in life. This is a good thing. Fucking whatever else is happening, don't worry about it. Enjoy the fucking good thing, you know? You're getting your dick sucked by a fucking hooker on Christmas Eve because you have no family, because they all disowned you because you have a heroin addiction. You don't want to be thinking about all that shit. Enjoy that dick sucking, bitch. Sea City of God. That was a good fucking movie. God damn, that was frightening. Anyway, here's the thing I got to promote that I forgot to in the intro. Yoga, January, 31 days, maybe 30 days. I don't know. Every day in January. It's coming back. Go to youtube.com/AriShaffir. If you don't want to subscribe to the whole thing, I get it. Subscribe to the yoga playlist starting in January. I'll put some up beforehand. I just did it again yesterday for the first time in like almost a month, and I'm fucking sore. So out of shape. If you don't know what the yoga is, I do. I don't try to push anybody. I do low-level yoga that is accessible, and I try to make it fun. You can do it in your basement, whatever. The funniest ones are the ones I did with Joe List and Robert Kelly and Mike Vecchione. So all of January is going to be one a day. So get ready. Get your yoga mat now before lockdown start or get worse. And join me all January for the fucking yoga challenge. You can do it. They're like 20 to 30 minutes. Even if they're 35, 15 of that is me just fucking talking. You see these long intros and outros? You think yoga is going to be different? You think I can get right to the fucking stretchy parts that hurt? Do you know me at all? You guys, I think that's it. I don't think I have anything else to say, so we should just wrap it up. No, that says where I'm at. Let's see. What did I not say that I wrote down? The way it's shown in movies. Oh, I didn't even say that. Well, Eli got to it. The difference between how obsessive compulsiveness is shown in the films versus... I just thought he had OCD, but the devil with him. It's the devil part that's like, oh, that's, I should get that Daniel Johnson devil song. Because he had serious mental problems. That's what I'll go out with. Or maybe I'll play it before. The go out songs, Oh, there's a Spotify playlist. This dude, Botesh, on my Patreon, made a fucking Spotify playlist. I got to put it out soon. It's every song that's ever been in Skeptic Tank. Not in the YouTube version, but that is the only benefit for the audio-only version, is the music choices. But YouTube has fucking, you know, you can't steal people's work, I guess. Tell people what a great joke writer he is in the intro with the roast and stuff. Did that. Mental health in general. But yeah, benefits of therapy. Got a good one. One gave up on me. The lady said no weed. Every comic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No election results still. Please do not. Sixth and Jump. Patreon. The best new podcast of 2020, says the New York Times. Dude's asking for cash. It's tough to lie about not having any money when you are a rich white guy and speaking a different language. Thank you, Manscaped. Thank you, DHM Detox. You guys, that's it. Until next week. I want you to have a great Thanksgiving. I guess no one's allowed to fucking get together, right? I am going to try to find a turkey where I am. I don't even know if they have them at a market in what city? Not going to tell you. That was solid. Not even wet. Solid. And then make it. I don't know. There's no cranberries out here. So I'll figure out something else to put on. Yeah. I don't know. I'm having a good time, you guys. From now on, if you do watch YouTube, I'm going to be doing fucking podcast intros and outros, hopefully from fucking weirdo spots with awesome backgrounds. I like mixing this up. I'm just fucking meandering now, aren't I? I got fucking nothing to add. I wish I could tell you about some of this shit. I will tell you on the Patreon. So what I'm doing right now is I'm still doing some like regular Patreon shit, but I'm saving up like when I walk Bandit, I'll do little like stuff about the cities that I'm in, whatever. And I'll just like, I'm saving those and I'll just upload all those in like, I don't know, late December or something like that. One a day. Because that has like, oh, what a cool painting. It's raised. That has like, you know, the cities I'm in and shit like that. And I'd rather not. You know, here's the reason I don't want to say. I'm not trying to be mysterious or anything. I like making mistakes. When I travel, I like making mistakes. I like finding my own way. I like making my own path. So I don't want people telling me, oh, you got to go to this place, got to go to that place. I'd rather hear somebody that I talk to go like, oh, is there a good pizza delivery here? And they're like, yeah, this one has good deep dish. This one has good flatbread. Oh, there's a new one in town. But people want you to like, if they've been in that country, not if they live there, but I'm saying if they've been there before, they want you to walk in their steps. So it's a form of reminiscing. You tell them what a great time you had, and then you really want that person to do the exact same thing. When the real advice should be like, well, I just wandered and found some bar. Don't go to that bar because I got lucky that night. Go to your own bar. Just go to some neighborhood and find your own place, make your own stories, and then fucking try to convince some other guy to do exactly what you did. Start writing the book too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. For Eli Sayers, no. That's it for Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 407. Obsessive compulsive. With Eli Sayers saying, so long. all right, bye guys, bye bye. See it stuck in my mind, and I know it's crazy. Hey, it's not that bad at all. When you think of the world, I know it's crazy. Hey, I'm not that bad at all. I'm trapped in my mind, and I know it's crazy. Hey, it's not that.
I was living in a devil town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh Lord, it really brings me down about the devil town. And all my friends were vampires. Didn't know they were vampires. Turns out I was a vampire myself in the devil town. I was living in a devil town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh Lord, it really brings me down about the devil town.